What's that beeping?
I think Dave's testing.
I know the sheriff wanted to check.
Yeah, the donuts are done. That's my. The donuts are done.
Prior.
Did you figure out what that was, guys?
We will. We will call to order the board supervisors meeting at 8:47 on the clock. We will start by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Be careful, I've been a little busy this morning for some reason.
The Open Meeting, the Open Meetings Act is posted on the east wall, attendance by observation. Jurgens Hill, Bauman, Dorn, Lytle, Byers, and Tiemann. Consent agenda. One is general agenda, two is approved minutes of meeting held August 3rd, 2016. Three, approve all claims through August 17th, 2016 in the amount of, and we've added, Don can explain this a little better, but because of RCI and the end of the year.
The end of our insurance year, we have to pay any claims that are left as a run-out period, and I just got an email this morning that there's right now sitting there over $100,000 to be paid, and we don't know what it'll be here in the next couple of days, so we had to increase the petty cash claim amount.
By $90,000, so that's $791,442.60, and basically that's what we're doing in there is transferring that. So that will change that amount there, increase that by another $90,000. So that we can cover those claims if they come in.
It falls in between a pay period. So that's
yep. Accept claim number 16080122 to Beatrice Lawn Care in the amount of $419. And claim number 16080235 to RL Tiemann Construction in the amount of $7,982.42 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve register of deeds fee report for the month of July 2016. Approve utility permit number 1054 for Windstream Nebraska Inc. will be plowing and boring 5,182 feet of fiber cable from the intersection of East Apple Road and South 68 Road east to Highway 34B. Will be boring in 5,182 feet of cable 5 foot deep in North Ditch 28 foot off center of road. Will also bore 5 to 6 feet below all culverts and driveways. All hand holes will be placed such that the back of the handhole is 36 inches from the back of the right-of-way. Located in Southeast 4th, Section 4, and Southeast 4th, Section 3, Township 6 North, Range 7 East, Nemaha Township. Entertain a motion to approve.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, seconded by Byers. Any questions, comments? Vote. 7-0 in favor. Regular agenda. Approve or disapprove claim number 16080122 to Beatrice Lawn Care in the amount of $419 and claim number 16080235 to RL Tiemann Construction in the amount of $7,982.42. Total dollar of claims paid will now be $799,844.02. Entertain a motion to approve.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Hill. And these are both Eric Tiemann's businesses, so that's why we vote on separate. Vote. 6 in favor with Tiemann abstaining. Comments from the public? Seeing none, we'll move on. Committee reports, building and grounds.
Nothing unusual.
Equalization.
Nothing unusual. Well, everything unusual.
Yeah, it was a busy morning. finance and insurance.
We'll talk about both of those separately unless Terry wants to talk about road and bridge. And then I was going to ask Gus about the claim for dummies that he turned in.
You're the RV jar.
I've never approved a claim for a dummy.
It'd be my line of work to be surprised. But
pretty good, guys.
But we'll have discussion around insurance and the budget later, so I don't have anything additional. But Terry likes to talk about all the money that he and Galen are spending, so go ahead.
It's not all there yet. Here's a few ones I picked out this time. Fund transfer to 9/11 communications for approximately $50,000. Matron Incorporated, assessor's office, maintenance, $20,000. Region 5 services, approximately $10,000. And Region 5 systems, approximately $21,000. Standard appraisal service, $4,132. Beatrice Concrete, sand and gravel, county, $23,000. Catherine Sons Asphalt Materials, $6,709. R.L. Tiemann, this would be county gravel, $7,900. Excuse me. And Rock On Incorporated Township again, $6,720. Insurance fund, regional care, $128,000. And communications funds to sue the City of Beatrice, $20,000. In this particular time frame, I mean, there's a lot of communication funds that went to the City of Beatrice, so we'll talk about that later.
Okay. I'm going to update everybody a little bit on, as part of this insurance, since our Beatrice 6 case, we have, this board has had discussion about hiring an outside firm to look more into what we'd call why the county has no insurance for that claim now. And as that, we have been visiting with some firms and some different attorneys, and we have hired, last week we signed the paperwork to hire Joel Bacon and Joel Nelson out of the law firm Keating, O'Gara, Nedvin and Peter out of Lincoln. And what they are going to do is give us an opinion on insurance coverage for the Beatrice 6 case and verdict. They estimate around 40 hours at approximately $190 an hour. That's an estimate. They will, when they get done with their opinion, they will, at a regular meeting, we've had discussion with them, they will be down here at a regular meeting, not a closed meeting, and they will be having that discussion here at our one of our board meetings. They estimate it'll take somewhere between 2 and 4 months, so come up with their opinion, what they call an opinion letter. A lot of that depends on, they said, how successful they are at getting some paperwork that they're requesting and stuff. So,
and that seems like a big amount of money, but we have to look at the scale of things. That's pennies on the dollar if we're successful finding a way to collect some on liability insurance. So,
Dawn and her office staff, they have been digging through a lot of our, what I'd call our records that the county has, and pulling out a lot of records of any type that are related to insurance and maybe insurance coverage or lack of insurance coverage with the Beatrice 6. They've been doing that the last 2 to 3 weeks. Brought a lot of that up there, and then they'll go through all of that. They'll research all of that, and hopefully they'll visit with more people involved. And in time, then they will give us what they call it an opinion letter. They'll be down here to discuss that in a regular meeting. So, anything else to add? Otherwise, we'll move on. Human resources.
Nothing.
Nothing. Law enforcement, emergency management.
One thing. Hey, Gus, would you like to talk?
Thank you.
Hey, no problem.
Yes, I've seen you for a while.
Good.
That'll cost you down the road. On the request for investigation through planning and zoning, that's been completed. And that will be going, we'll send it down to Nancy, and then she can disseminate how she needs to from that point. But that was done as of, I think, last week. So you'll be getting that for your review. Okay.
And that report's up to, you said Amanda?
No, it'll go over to Nancy.
Nancy, okay.
Yeah. Because I don't know if there's something he's going to want to see, but at least she can send out where she wants from there. So.
Hey, Gus. Question I had for you, since they canceled the meeting a couple, 3 weeks ago, as far as the jail inspection.
Oh, yes. Haven't heard back. Our jail inspection is going to be, I think they said, around 9 to 10 in the morning on September 12th. I just heard that yesterday. The quarterly meeting, I've not heard back yet when they're going to do that, but he was hoping for sometime end of this month, but I haven't heard.
They are still planning on coming here.
Yes, that was the intent. Okay. They want to take a walk through. Yep.
I didn't have anything else. Law enforcement, emergency management.
We do have one thing later on here on the discussion on the communication tower lease and stuff. We'll have that a little bit and stuff. So that we had as emergency management. Road and bridge.
Yeah. Okay. Galen is on vacation this week, so we had a dummy doing the report, so it's brief. Rock on. Started hauling on the four townships that were left from last fall allocations. Ace Pit is back in production, so we have hopefully a reliable source to get caught up here. And there is 18 townships on the spring allocation that are finished. And so as soon as those fall four picked up and finished, they'll go start on that, and possibly here in the next few months, we would be caught up. I mean, there's a good chance of it. I'm not going to guarantee that, though. The Coke Road, basically the whole road is poured, the main drive.
This Coke Road was, Coke had visited with us about basically what you call the old road.
Oh, that's what we're talking
about. Coke Road is. That's not Hickory Road, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll start with Hickory then.
Okay.
Basically, the whole road is finished except for turn lanes, shouldering, and there's a gap between the railroad yet. I want to make a comment about that. We've been dealing with Burlington Northern for 2 years now or longer and still have no response. That is a poor-run organization as I've ever seen. So, and I don't think you got any updates, do you, Myron, on that?
No, I do not. All
I can say is just pitiful. That's all I can say. Railroad, no update.
How do you feel about that, Terry? I do have an update. I visited with Matt Manning. I think Monday afternoon or two, I can't remember. Monday afternoon, Tuesday morning, I visited with Matt Manning about the railroad and asked if he'd heard anything. No. And then I says, well, what's going to happen there at the railroad track? What are you planning on doing? He says, most of the times when we do a railroad, we have to do the same thing. He says, there's a gap. They left a gap of approximately 30 to 50 feet from the railroad track. He said that will be filled in with the best material we can find to make that travelable, he says. And he says, every time we deal with the railroads, he says, we normally have to do this. And then a period of time, whenever they do the railroad crossing, then that will be filled in. And I says, well, now who's going to be filling that in then, and at whose cost?
Mm-hmm.
He says, well, the county will be in charge of filling that in, and it will be the county's cost.
And the people that are there right now are professionals at that. It would have been the cheapest thing to finish that right through there. They'd have had it done. It's going to cost the county more money because the railroads are not paying for this.
Yep.
The county is.
Right.
And that's the pitiful thing about it.
He said
it's going to cost us more because they've drugged their feet for 2 years now.
Yeah. He said normally what you end up doing is hiring local contractor to come and fill that last gap in after the railroad crossing will be done. So
the Burlington does not pay for this. The county does.
Right.
But they can't get their act together to get it done. I don't understand.
This isn't uncommon either, Terry. I mean, this is pretty much par for the railroad to drag past when the project's done, and then you do go back and fix what they made you leave.
I mean, it's going to be a higher cost. There's no doubt about it again. All right, I got that off my chest.
Are you sure you don't want Amber to comment on this? Amber might want to comment.
Last but not least, the original 89th Road, which is Koch's property right now, there's a turning lane that comes onto Hickory off of there. In the original plans, it was supposed to be taken out and closed off right through there when Hickory went through. Koch has requested that we leave this and replace this opening or turn lane for them going onto Hickory on the original road. Mark Minnelli said it's possible. It would have to meet board approval, but there would have to be, there's a 48-inch culvert in there right now. It would probably have to double in size because of the drainage that's changed. And so, of course, Koch graciously said they would pay for it. So, with that being said, I was in charge of contact with the officials out there, and we have no report on that yet. So,
did you visit with them, Terry? Or?
Yes. But I will have at a later date here. That's it.
Oh, to have been a fly on the wall.
I did have to make a phone call to Dawn to make sure that I was covered for liability insurance.
The price on 96-inch tubes just went up quite a bit, too, didn't it?
The bidding process is the really expensive thing here.
John attended a Boswell meeting Monday night. I couldn't make it, but there was a major purchase there. You want to talk about that, John?
Well, Boswell did agree to sell their baler, which hasn't been functioning for the last month, and doesn't get the compaction that they would desire, and they are purchasing a compactor, which costs about $750,000, that will increase the density, I think, about 30%, and hopefully extend the life of the landfill. And actually, they've also added a couple of contracts to that they're taking material in from, and the life of their existing landfill is now down to 2 or 3 years, so they will be moving forward on the piggyback in between the existing landfills as fast as possible.
The biggest thing to me is this is going to increase their efficiency huge. Most time the garbage comes into the main structure, run up a conveyor, bailed, and then hauled out. Now the garbage comes in, it gets weighed, goes right out to the dump, compacted. So you're saving a lot of time and expense, I believe, switching what we're doing here. So.
We talked about that like 6 years ago. Why does it work now, but it was ridiculous back then?
There is a different engineering firm in charge now.
Is HDR gone?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
We're making friends right now.
I know we are, aren't we? Yeah.
Wait till the insurance folks get up here. Yeah. You're leaving right now.
Yeah.
Never mind. Terry is on insurance committee.
The only other thing we did talk a little bit, and we're having some discussion with other people too, the Blue Spring River Bridge there, the signs up there, there's a lot of discussion about what exactly is the weight limit on the Blue Springs River Bridge and stuff.
Right, and if we got kind of the correct sign up there that accurately reflects what can travel across it.
But now that sign, and Galen wasn't here, wasn't here Monday and not here again today, I mean, he would have a better idea. That sign, though, is one that, I mean, we don't come up with that sign. That would have been based on the inspection of that bridge.
That's what Galen told me. It's based on the state inspection.
State inspection. So,
that bridge.
But somewhere, I mean, that picture's on those signs. Yep. That's whoever maybe makes the sign has that picture. I don't know where that picture comes from.
It's misleading, Myron.
It is misleading. I'll agree with you. And so and we're going to have more conversation on that.
That is the same sign that we have on the rest of our bridges, you know, with various tonnages on them. But
and I haven't gone and looked on our blacktop roads how, I mean, those signs are by tonnage too, but I...
Right, they look exactly the same.
They do look exactly the same, okay.
Just different tonnages based on each bridge.
Because, yeah, the co-op down there is hauling, and state patrolman and the DOT says, no, you guys can't haul more than this many pounds, and everybody thought you could.
And some of those, and the worst of it is, it's forcing them over to the Rockford Road, bringing them down to the Wymore Liberty Road, back across on that asphalt road. It makes it about a 12-mile trip instead of a 1-mile trip for the elevator, and puts a lot of weight on a lot of other roads that don't need it. So,
okay. Anything else for Roden Bridge? Okay. Next on the agenda, approve or disapprove the county health insurance plan for 2016-2017.
Motion to approve. Second.
A motion by Bauman, seconded by Lytle, and I believe that's why some of you are here.
Being a former Burlington Northern employee.
Then what is the problem? Explain that to me first.
The problem is this. There's two tracks running in one direction and no competition. They can do anything.
Okay.
In case you wondered, that's
all right,
the problem.
All right. And we need your name and address, Brad, for the record here.
Okay. Yeah. I'm Brad Swigert with Northwestern Mutual. Also Amber Verona Anderson and Lil Eisenhower are with us today. And our mailing address is 9300 Underwood Avenue, Omaha, Nebraska. And I guess we probably need no introduction, but... I want to hand this out, and I did take a buyout from the railroad.
I can't afford the cross.
That's probably right. It's been a long time. This has been quite a year for insurance for Gage County. We want to go over, this is a narrative recap of what we talked with the insurance committee. Myron and Don and Terry, and we met on August 6th, and then after that, because they were unable to be there, I called and kind of went over what we talked about with both Denny and Matt. But this year, as usual, we put your group up for bid. And in summary, we can just tell you that because of the size of your group, you're still subject to underwriting, which, you know, a lot of people say in healthcare reform, well, I thought we don't have to be underwritten, but there's certain criteria, and your group is in that size. But in summary, we can tell you that United Healthcare, Aetna, National General, and Blue Cross Blue Shield all declined your group as a fully insured group, which means that they see some significant claim history there, and we all know that, and last year was one of those years. We did meet on August 6th, and I think probably in the short version, I'll just kind of go over kind of some recaps. First of all, the committee agrees that was there. Actually, Amber and Don are the two that get very involved in this, that it's probably going to be in the best interest to move the third-party administrators to Cypress Benefits. RCI has been a good company out of Scottsbluff, Nebraska. However, some of the claims processing procedures and so forth aren't really in sync with the industry today. And it's been very difficult for Don and Amber on having to manually do a lot of things they shouldn't have to do. And I'll give one example. You use Magellan Rx as your drug provider, and the drug card costs, your co-pays, go towards your out-of-pocket through health care reform. Still, RCI system and Magellan system don't talk to each other. So that's it's really, in short, for one word, it's a mess, you know, calculating that, and it's very labor-intensive. That's not the case with Cypress. They do a lot with Magellan, and they're in sync with that. And the problem is, and it's not a Magellan problem, an RCI problem, but Magellan only has a handful, less than five, cases with Magellan. They use a different provider. So therefore, you know, I guess, you know, it'd be kind of like Burlington Northern and that crossing we were talking about. It's not a priority. It's not as much a priority. And so anyway, the if we kind of go down to the bottom of the first page there, here's some fixed costs. Now, I don't want to overlook that Barden Insurance Group, who was your reinsurer, they put $220,000 of lasers on some specific claims. And what that means is, just as a brief review, that there are some health conditions that they're saying, hey, we're not going to pay up to $220,000 on these, and we just combined them once, which would be the county's responsibility. However, through negotiation with Cypress, since we met on August 6th, Cypress got Barden to remove those lasers if they'd renew with them. So the first question that Denny's going to have is, well, I see Cypress's administrative costs are about $2,500 a year more than RCI. And I would just say, guess what? Cypress was able to get that $220,000 laser lifted. And so, in summation, I mean, our recommendation's probably going to be to go with Cypress, but to stay with Barden, because there's no reason to change it if those lasers are removed. So they were able to do that, and it's nothing different than the power of big, you know. I mean, you know, the negotiating power of, and they basically went to them. And it's always interesting when you come in with a quote from a competitor and then all of a sudden, you know, RCI also says, well, now we can match that. Well, you couldn't match it. And we asked them about matching it, you know, because moving is not always comfortable. However, in this particular situation, and I would also defer to Dawn on that if she wanted to make a comment on it. But I mean, it's been very hard for, I mean, administratively, it's caused you a lot of headaches in the last year because of RCI's inability to do their job the way that we feel it should be done.
Probably in the last 6 months it's been.
Right? 6 months. And you know what? And in all honesty, in defense of them, you know what they tell us from a business standpoint? It's awfully hard to recruit good people to Scotts Bluff, Nebraska to work for you. Except I think Myron or Terry made the comment, it won't be long. There'll be a few in Sydney that'll be looking for a job that might want to move there.
That's the report you hear. Yeah,
yeah, with Cabela's. So, anyway, if we... and stop me if you have any questions. The other thing that we looked at that we think is very important for you to consider, and I think the committee was kind of in sync on this too, is to do a transplant carve-out option. And what that is basically, and probably Matt has as much first-hand information on that with his profession as anyone, this is a carve-out that if you had any organ transplants that were necessary within your group, that the claims would be paid by the carve-out policy rather than through the reinsurer and your and this can be just ungodly expensive unfortunately, you'll have one with a group your size at some point. So we think that's money well spent to do that carve-out, which on page 2 there's a $14,978 annual cost on that. However, with that said, what happens, because the reinsurer knows you do a carve-out policy, it reduces their premium, which is about $3,000. You know, they know they don't have that liability, so they're reducing their premium also as a result of that. So we did the narrative thing for you. If you might have some questions now or later, hopefully to answer some of those. But if we flip to the last page, and that gets right down to the claims, and basically this was a year that, if you look down in column one where it says current regional care, and you look down to the second highlighted line where it says maximum claim liability, $962,000, you exceeded that this year. So that was just a year that, and probably those conditions are fairly well under control, but you did exceed it, and, you know, reinsurers certainly look at that, especially when they're trying to recoup their losses. So how much? We can't tell you exactly, but we can tell you that it's probably in the $250,000 range, right, Amber?
It's
hard to say until we get the, you know, end of the year, August 31st. I will add that you do have one surgery of an employee that's going to happen on August 31st. And by making this change, that's going to become a liability. Would be anyway, but it's, you know, that's not going to be under the current plan, because the payout will be on the new plan. What that basically means in summation is it lays a claim over to next year. And so that just means right out of the chute. And that's a procedure that we checked on that day and could be between $30,000 and $70,000. But that's just how scheduling is and stuff. It happens all the time. So, but that is something to consider. So basically, your fixed costs will go down. Change. But your maximum liability is going to be higher. Now, when you see RCI's is $1,237,000 and Cypress is $1,374,000, that's because they're factoring in a possible runout. Because after August 31st, the claims that are not paid become the responsibility of the new plan. That may not happen at all. But they factor that in based on the potential of that happening. So that's not a for sure thing, but it's just something that calculates into on your self-funded programs. So I should probably stop for a second, see if anybody has any questions. It's been very complicated, I will say. And that, you know, we have a great working relationship with you guys, and we appreciate that. And we had a real good meeting on August 6th, and I'd be less than honest if I didn't say I'm just the spokesperson, because Amber and Don are the ones that are doing all this work. And I don't mean to give Don any extra credit here, but she does an absolute outstanding job as compared to some other county clerks that we deal with. I don't know what some other counties would do if they had some of the issues she has, but probably hire a couple more people to do it. But so,
come up to the mic,
yeah,
or sit over there at the table on that mic if you want to do that one too.
Amber, either way. Amber Brown.
Name. Yep.
I'm Amber Verana Anderson from Northwestern Mutual. I just want to go over, in summary, what our recommendation would be for the board. Brad went over the cost, and as you will see, if you renew your reinsurance with Barden, it is about $20,000 more than this DHR management. But what Brad was just going over on the max claim liability is Barden's is less, $1.237 million. versus DHR's is 1.374. With the known health condition that's going to happen on August 31st, and the fact of we're not quite sure how much is outstanding at RCI, I would think it would be worth it to renew with Barden, even if you change to Cypress Benefit Administrators, so you know that all of your claims are going to be covered. With a $137,000 aggregate limit on DHR, you know, if one surgery is going to take up $60,000 of it, it doesn't leave a whole lot for other claims that might be lagging in August.
And as weird as it sounds, it is just a cutoff date. That if the claims aren't processed and paid that date, they go to the new plan. It seems very strange to people saying, well, geez, the procedure could have been done in July. But if the claim isn't paid by August 31st, it flows over to the new. And that's not unusual, but I mean, it's just that we know that in this particular situation, that possibly 60, 70 of it, could be 30, could be 100, is going to flow over.
And when I had RCI run a report on August 9th, there was 146,000 outstanding.
And they're working on that, of course, to pay that. So.
Well, and I have no idea how much I contributed, but I appreciate all that you guys do for me.
We didn't mention
it. We are so lucky to have this wonderful, but the insurance that this county provides, and if any of you are ever unlucky enough to need to use it, be blessed with what we have here and wonderful representation.
I couldn't do my job without Amber. I know that. Amber and Roll.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's true.
Tried not to close up and say just Amber, but I you know.
I didn't say you were one of the major claimants, Denny. That's something you don't want to brag about, right?
That's exactly right.
That's it. But the transplant, I briefly touched on. Anybody have any questions on that? I mean, that's just you get a transplant. It could be $400,000 claim, one.
$400,000, and you have annual expenses, anti-rejection meds and testing. It's not a one-time cost. It goes on.
Yeah.
If you're lucky.
And, well, we have another organization like yours we worked with that one claimant probably $600,000 to $800,000 a year currently. And that's just what things cost.
Now I got a question about these carryover claims. Is there any possibility? I mean, it's going to be a different administrator, but it's still going to be Barden.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to transfer from RCI to Cypress if we go with Cypress.
Right.
But is there any possibility we're going to get part of that because of the transition? Or
Well, hopefully you get most of it. Most of it should be paid. Yeah. But, I mean, they have to factor it in because they don't know. And that's why that 137, they take just a normal percentage, and that is 137 of their max out of pocket there includes possibly what they're saying could be 137. The only concern we had with that is, and we talked about that as a group, is we already know that one of the bills that's going to occur on that day, on August 31st, there's no way it's going to get paid, and it's going to be $30,000 to $70,000. Normally.
Right.
So, but not unusual, but that's a good question. So it's kind of six of one, half dozen another, like you said, you know, you know, that's, if you're going to have claims as a claimant, you want to have them all in one calendar year as early as possible, you know, but that isn't how health works. So, so that's And I would say that, you know, we would recommend, and we talked about it with your health committee about trying to do it before. We need to move rapidly. Cypress's position, they were here with us, by the way. I don't know if I neglected to say that. There's a Cypress representative here with us on October 6th. They're confident they can get it done, but, you know, there'll be some glitches. There always is, whether we say there isn't. It should be a seamless transition. You've heard that before, right? There shouldn't be any problem getting the ID cards and so forth by the first of September. Anything else?
Basically what we're looking at then is a total fixed cost, and this is a known cost to the county then of $266,000, a little over.
Mm-hmm.
If I look at that right. And then our total maximum claim liability, in other words, what the county could possibly pay next year, not saying we will, it depends on the claims
throughout
the year, but it's $1,237,000.
Well, $1,374.
No.
Mm-mm. No.
We're at
the middle one there.
Yeah, we're at the middle. Right? We're not with Fidelity because we're staying with Barden.
It would be $1,237,555.
Right. Mm-hmm. So. Same if it was with either one.
Right.
And
But we will have part of that fixed cost, though, now includes our carve-out plan in that fixed cost of
right.
Mm-hmm. $14,978.
Right, right.
So that makes that a little bit higher, which will...
Unfortunately, someday you'll use that, yeah, and then you'll be glad you had it.
Yeah.
And the nice thing, like Matt said, when you have it, if you have that, those aren't instant. Usually, they're an ongoing process. So as we talked, you know, if you remember when the committee met, we talked about that this could put you in a locked position for 2-3 years. You know, just being plain stuck where you're at, no matter what the cost is going to be, if you didn't have that, if you had one in the process.
Well, part of what we talked about was, too, that we had some extra claims this past year, what we would maybe consider more than what we've had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it then when you went to get bids, that was a factor. That was probably the contributing factor of why some didn't bid, period.
It's all they have to look at, yeah.
I guess looking forward into the future, if we ever had a transplant, we would have less that would be out there bidding on a self-insurance. Close to zero. Probably none, yes.
Yeah. I mean, so whatever the renewal came in, you'd just be stuck with that for possibly multiple years.
Right.
So it's a very good addition to, and most groups your size consider it.
Byron?
Yeah.
Maybe Brad can elaborate for sure, but the increase basically for the people that carry the insurance in the county is, to me, very, very minimal. What was the amount? 5%? Is that what it was?
We talked about 5%, right?
Yeah, we increased it.
The increase.
To me, that is... When you compare it to the private sector, that is nothing.
We're seeing we're seeing some individual, I mean, they're all over the board, but, you know, 20-30% mm-hmm. this year. And next year, the same as expected. Except hold it, that's all going to change January 1st, I forgot.
Well, no, but part of what we talked about, too, was, I mean, you guys updated us a little bit. I'll call it on the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act. You know, that was a lot of unknowns going into it, you know, and now it's been in there a year, and now you're starting to see on TV, at least, or in the radio or press or whatever, that there are some companies that they're bailing. They're saying the claims have been too high. For various reasons, you know, and you guys updated us some on that.
Right, and one of the things to understand, when United Healthcare says we're getting out, they're getting out of the exchange. They're not getting out of the individual business. They're just not going to offer their products through the health insurance exchange. And the problem with the exchange, if it is a problem, I think it's probably good to have the exchange, is many of those people have been uninsured. So when they come in with the knees and the hips and the all the procedures they really needed to get done to be healthy, and all of a sudden they're going to get them all done. And that costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And if the different funnels, if the different spigots that come into the funnel don't all work, the money isn't there. And that's what most naysayers of healthcare reform have said. You know, we were supposed to have this, we were supposed to have this, we were supposed to have that. That's not there. Well, guess what? I guess we just write the check and forget it. And but I will say, you know, with people will, like your groups will say, well, do you think we're going to have a repeal of healthcare reform? Well, which part is it you want repealed? You want the unlimited transportability, the unlimited lifetime benefits, the no pre-existing conditions? Oh, no, 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 we don't want to get rid of that stuff. We just want to get rid of Obamacare. Well, what do you think it is? I mean, it's inclusive of all that stuff. And unfortunately, because, and you've been involved in it for many years, it's because, and I always say this, and probably said it to you guys before, I don't mean to be political, so don't put this in the paper, but... you know, the first president of the United States to propose major health care reform was in 1984, and the opposing party stopped him. The second one was in 94, and the opposing party stopped him. In 2004, we were too busy all over the world taking care of the world problems, and in 2014, we got it. And that first president's name was Reagan, and the second's name was Clinton. So this isn't a new problem. I mean, this is something Ronald Reagan's administration was the first one to formally propose, and that was 1984, and the Democrats stopped him, and then the Republicans stopped Clinton, and we still got that today. So, you know.
But the best people on insurance are the payers that don't use. And the current structure allows the non-users to not have to be into the exchange.
Yep.
They can stay on their parents, or they can opt out and take the penalties. So inherently, the finances of it are flawed because you need those people in there who aren't going to use it and who are going to pay.
That's who you really need.
That's who you need.
I mean, it's kind of like house insurance, you know, $26,000 roof, you know, I had put on my house this year. You wonder, how can they do that? Fortunately, the house is 30 years old. It happened 15 years ago, and now it happened again, and I'll probably die before it needs it again. But you know, I mean, it's a numbers game. Like, and that's the other thing. Repeal. You're going to repeal keeping your kids on policies till age 26. You know, and there was a.
But if they weren't on there, then they'd have to go to the exchange and they'd have to pay.
Yeah, they'd have to pay.
A payer who's a non-user, yeah. because the demographic, they're just the age group, they just don't use it.
They don't have insurance.
Or they don't have insurance.
Or they don't have it, and then
it's a penalty.
I mean, it's still America, I guess. That's all we can say.
A lot of bad debt for health providers.
Yeah, you walk into an emergency room in trouble, you're going to get served regardless of what you have or don't have. So, but...
So then our motion was to approve the county health insurance plan, and on the second page there, just so I think we're all on the same page, then that was to, it would be advisement to renew with the Barton Insurance Group. In addition, it's recommended by the committee to move the third-party administrator to Cypress Benefit Administrators and to add the transplant carve-out.
I would have moved my amend my motion to such that you just stated.
Just comment on.
Second.
Okay.
Bowman and Lytle.
Oh, and Lytle, so that's okay.
Yeah.
Myron, when you and I left that day after speaking to these people, the lady from here,
Cypress,
we both, I know, felt very comfortable.
Yes.
With this move, and the idea that to me RCI would come back saying, "Oh, now we can match it, don't cut it." I mean that.
No.
Beautiful. So
good. It's good. It happened.
it was. We felt very, very comfortable with the move that's being made here.
Cypress. Yes. So, any more questions for Brad or Amber? If not, vote 7-0 in favor to approve.
Okay, thank you. And then we'll set up, coordinate with you to have a meeting.
Yes.
Again, and then Don, we need to get some signatures to get that
Sometime in September, that would be great again, because I know since Gary got that going and since we've had that, that's been very, very...
I use Gary as an example all the time.
Yeah.
They kicked me off the insurance committee as soon as I did that. How do I get it?
Just the one.
I always use the
I couldn't attend the meeting, but I knew that Amber would take good care of us, so I didn't have any doubt.
He got it in, didn't he? I called, when I called Denny to go over this, I said, you know, people have to get used to increases. And I got a little orientation for the next few minutes that don't tell me that you have to get used to increases. I mean, it's reality, but not it's not pleasant. And but I will say, and Gary, for those of you that haven't heard it before, and you probably all have, when we did that first meeting, you know, nobody'd say anything, and I use this as an example to other groups, and he got up, and I thought it was just classic. He goes, kind of like, don't you guys call me on Saturdays about this stuff? These are the guys here. You better start talking now. But it is true. People are a little reluctant. And we always hang around afterwards if it's something of a confidential nature that somebody wants to talk about. I will add one thing. There's more advertisement on TV now for medicines than there are cars. And the hepatitis C pill that you can take for 12 weeks and burn hepatitis, does anybody know how much that costs?
It's a lot.
$100,000 a day. $1,000 a pill. And fortunately now the FDA says if it doesn't work the first time, you can do it twice. It's $1,000 a pill. So it's 90 grand. And there are people, we have one similar group to you guys that have three people on it right now. Anyway, well, thank you. If you have any questions, you have our numbers, and we'll just go from there.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Brad. Take care. Well, all.
Thank you.
It's good to be seen. It's good to be seen. I was told I wouldn't be, so I'm feeling awfully good about it.
Well, they didn't work you too hard this morning, did they?
No, they did not.
Brad, I didn't know if you worked them too hard this morning.
Oh, no. He called me at 5:30 because I'm still in Lincoln. I think I can make it. I said, well, watch the construction. You know, it's taking throwing a barrel out there.
I forgot school started.
Yeah. Use those barrels like slaloms.
Next on the agenda, we did have this, I believe Don said, on last meeting agenda. We forgot to include it on this agenda. Sandy Morris, he's here. And I think we'll put that in here. We're not going to vote on anything or do anything. It's just as much as she's here to share information with us this morning. Sandy Morrissey, the director of the Regional Prevention Coordinator, sharing information regarding funding and development of the prevention system within Region 5. Like I said, this was on a previous one meeting where she couldn't end up being here. When Don saw her walk in, she goes, oops.
I didn't get carried over to the next meeting.
There is not anything here to vote on or anything, but she's going to give us some updates or some information here. So name and address and everything.
I appreciate you fitting me in this time. Thank you. I saw I wasn't on the agenda, but you didn't seem to say go away, so figured you'd squeeze me in. Sandy Morrissey, Region 5 Systems Prevention Director. 1645 N Street, Lincoln, Nebraska. I couldn't have had a better lead-in than you talking about insurance here, because oftentimes people overlook our prevention efforts and the trickling effect substance abuse and related mental health issues have in regards to the cost within our communities. I was listening to him and it just so scary, and really I think on a federal level, they're saying more and more attention is being paid to prevention and not so much treatment in, because the costs are just too much. We can't afford not to look. So you have three sheets in front of you. Recall that every year the prevention federal block grant funds that come into Nebraska go down to the six regions. Within our region, we're probably the only one that has really remained grassroots in terms of coalitions. But we also do not make this a competitive grant. We have each county coalition, they submit a strategic plan, and every year those dollars can fluctuate according to their plan. So with Engage County this year, they did receive $15,671. I did provide you a sheet that shows you strategically what they were awarded. So on the first, on the left-hand column, you will see the amount requested, and on the right-hand, what was approved. We generally don't make cuts when it comes to your plan is solid. It's evidence-based. To look down the list, mentoring, evidence-based. It's proven effective in terms of helping youth stay out of trouble. Compliance checks with our law enforcement is total evidence-based and has been proven to stop sales to minors. And then response, RBST is responsible beverage server training. So those that aren't in compliance, we help with some of that training, or if they have new employees, they go through the training to ID and really pay attention to youth coming in trying to buy, and or adults trying to sell to or buying for minors. We do have money in there for media, youth leadership, youth activities, prescription drug take-back. So it's a solid plan. Any questions about that this year? You know, that's in combination with a lot of what Christine Lyons is doing with juvenile justice. We do have some training dollars set aside, many grants, if anybody in the community would want to do more. I did want to point out your third sheet. We do have a regional youth action board, our regional governing board, including Denny. They all approved. They are actually part of our system of care. So our goal is to have at least one youth representative from each of the 16 counties within southeast Nebraska. This year, coming into 2016-17, we'll have 100% representation. I do want to point out to you, you have two with Gage. Not every county gets two, but it's interesting. On the front page, you'll see Claire Hoekstra, and she is from Wymore. And you can turn the page, and you will see Shelby Decker. Shelby made it last year. I'll tell you, she's just a go-getter. Quiet but steady, and just really gets it. But we took on both of them because during interviews, every kid that applies, we had 39 interviews this year. We interview every single one of them. Kids that don't make it, it's due to the fact they just don't have leadership skills for that board level, because the regional governing board even allows them to oversee some funding. If we have youth apply for mini grants, the regional governing board has allowed those kids to approve those mini grants. So it's taken quite seriously. They sit around the same board table that our regional governing board does. So these are kids that have leadership skills. We continue to build on those. If the kids that apply don't have those, we encourage them to work locally. We stay in touch with them if we see that potential. We hire them as youth staff for our summer event the next year. We watch closely, see if they can move forward. But I'll tell you, both of these girls from Wymore, during the interview, really talked about alcohol drug issues in their community. Claire is just going to be a freshman. The leadership was evident. She was scared to death during the interview, which is wonderful, too, in terms of getting them through that process and having that experience. I will put her into a mentorship with one of the juniors or seniors, and it may be Shelby, because I see the potential and hope that she would continue for 4 years because she's that concerned with what's going on here, and Shelby, too. So I wanted you to know that was really significant to us, and we think there is work that needs to be done in Gage County with that. I just have one more thing I need to share with you today. Due to the increase with substance abuse issues, mental health promotion has really become also part of our work. And we recently, in the last year and a half, received some suicide prevention funds. I don't know if you're aware, but within Nebraska, we're about 36th in the nation with the lowest suicide rate. We're in the top 10 in the nation with youth suicide rates. So the grant we received, the Garrett Lee Smith really focuses on ages 10 to 24, but we're concerned at community at large. White males, midlife, 50 to 65 at highest risk when it comes to older population, but that 10 to 24 is significant. Hey, no laughing.
I said that's me.
Oh, well, and you know, there's really what they've identified is if they lose their spouse is a big one. If it's loss of a job, that kind of stress can really trigger it, and health related, where it's so painful they think. So there's a lot of information going out about suicide, but I'll tell you, to be in the top 10 with youth, we're really looking. Utah has done significant work. I hope to bring that into at least our area, if not Nebraska at large. But we're working diligently at getting information out there. One of the things I'm hearing from superintendents is our kids are in elementary school. They're seeing in first and second grade anxiety and depression. We haven't heard that. We've heard it fifth, sixth grade, even some of the drug use. But we're hearing first and second grade some anxiety and depression. So we know it's environmental. And part of that is if parents are on a fast clip, they have a tendency to push kids on a fast clip. And so everything's just bum, 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 to slow down. And so you can see the work in terms of us trying to back up a little bit, talking about limiting maybe activities, stopping with the energy drinks, the Mountain Dew, sleep, number one mental health concern for depression among youth, lack of sleep. But I was with law enforcement Friday morning doing our QPR question, persuade, refer training, and a policeman was on his third energy drink. I said, no. I mean, cardiovascular issues related to all of that, huge. But we've become that quick of a society, people aren't even thinking in terms of those actions, and thus look at our healthcare costs, right, with some of those that could be preventable. So know that within Lancaster County, we have just we got enough curriculums, it's called Second Step, into our elementary schools for every classroom. The teachers are on fire about it, but it really helps kids with problem-solving skills, coping skills, some of those healthy behaviors. We're hoping if we can start there at a primary prevention level with elementary school, we'll work into the junior high. I have gotten extra curriculums. We do want to bring those into the rural community and also begin to really push. But we had some LPS last year use them, and the teachers were just sold on it. If they're sold on it, they're going to use it. And they don't. It's not a curriculum. They actually just incorporate it into each class throughout the day. So Texas, the state of Texas, is requiring every school district in the state to use this curriculum because they're so concerned with the stress level. And you know how that's going to perpetuate if we don't get hold of that.
And unfortunately, for years, we've looked at the major metropolitan areas as being the where this is all happening and haven't thought about the areas like Gage, Jefferson, Saline, where it's happening too. And we're recognizing it and starting to say, hey, we need to train, we need to educate, and we're moving in that direction, and thank you.
Yeah. You know, we, with some of the educational service units, they're saying we could sure benefit from a school psychologist or a social worker. And then they talk collectively in terms of, geez, could we spread it a little bit and they could cover a couple of rural areas? They said it wouldn't be enough. One time a week in our school isn't enough. What we're up against. You start to hear things like that and you know it's happening, and yeah, we've got to put some things in place. So I'm following Utah closely, hoping to bring in a former school administrator who put together a whole program, but it's peer-to-peer, low cost, highly effective. The last 4 years, zero, and they were top two in the nation with youth suicide rates, zero suicide rates in Utah. So those are the kind of things we'll be looking at, research-based, that we'll move forward with and bring in. So I appreciate your time. Any questions? Thanks for letting me interrupt.
Thank you for the report. Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yep. Back up to regular agenda. Approve or disapprove drug court agreement for fiscal year 2016-17 in the amount of $10,521.53.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, seconded by Byers. And I think, Roger, maybe you'll update us a little bit on
that. I just tell you, since Rick went on the bench, I've been covering drug court for a while, which is interesting. I wish I had time to do it on a regular basis. But that asking is about $2,000 less than last year. I would note to you, as of August, which we're into, we're anticipating having about 40 participants, which is up significantly, which helps us, unless they're all coming from Gates County. But the percentage of Gates County is down a little bit. That's why you're asking for the budget is a little bit down. And I won't go through a bunch of stuff. I would just tell you, though, that the Southeast Nebraska Adult Drug Court has maintained about a 76% success rate. And again, for a program like this, that's exceptional. And like I said, having been able to watch it for firsthand for the last month or so, they do a great job over there. And again, you know, there's some, you know, one step forward, two step back, but it is a problem-solving court, and it does benefit. If somebody asks you, well, that's $10,000 that you're spending here, I would tell you that is a significant savings for this county. That will cover about one drug trial, quite frankly, as far as our cost. So you figure we've got numerous participants in that, plus the fact that we're trying to get these people at least recovering addicts so they can have a job, maintain a family, you know, basically become a participating member of society. So I would certainly encourage the board to continue their participation with this program.
Any more discussion? If not, vote. 7-0 in favor. Approve or disapprove agreement between Gates County and the Beatrice Humane Society, Inc. in the amount of $15,000.
I move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Byers, seconded by
Bauman.
Discussion or comments, I guess. So this is.
I've discussed with the Humane Society relative to what they are doing out in the county, and there's more and more involvement. So we definitely need
it. Yeah. This is the same agreement, same funding as last year. I will say this, I did happen to drive by out there on the highway last Sunday, and they are moving dirt out there by the just crossing the college there.
Right, the new building.
So for the new building. So they are working on that. That was good to see, I guess.
That's great.
Vote, 7-0 in favor. Discussion of fiscal year 16-17 county budget.
So just as a note of dates, next meeting, the 31st, will be basically last chance for anything because following the 14th, we'll have a public hearing. We'll have to post for that 31st.
If there's no changes, if I can, you know, if she doesn't have any valuation changes, then I can get it in. I know, Scott, you probably don't know for sure. Your deadlines were moved up because of your move. Do you know if those deadlines are still up? Or if we...
As far as I know.
So we'll have to see. It may be touch and go because she's not going to certify to me until Friday for sure. So I have to have...
So really, there shouldn't be any... If there's any changes to be made, they've got to be done... because we got to vote on that budget on the
14th. September 14th. It'll be on the agenda to vote on, yes.
So to have it published and ready, we really got to, by the 31st, unless we've got to, because you got to have it.
Well, it has to be published 5 days prior to we can have the public hearing, and I have to have see what the deadline's going to be.
So if you talk on the 31st, outside of having another special meeting, so really the 31st is kind of the day we ought to pretty well have it done, which is why we've been talking about this at several meetings.
So if anybody has any ideas of changes, you probably want to tell me before, because if we do changes on the 31st, it has to be republished again because that's not your published budget.
So
you know if changes.
Oh, so
in a couple of days, you need to let me know. I mean,
yeah,
we're done, but we'll have to republish it again because of.
When we vote on it on the 14th, we can still make amendments. Nope.
14th is done. So any changes you know of now that need to be made, you need to let me know as soon as possible. We need to decide this if you make changes at this first meeting, we'll have to republish it again prior to passing it on the 14th.
What I'm saying is, if let's don't publish anything until the 31st. And so the 31st is like last call on what we discuss on the 31st.
So then we're gonna have our public hearing on the 31st.
That's what I was saying. Have a public hearing on.
You have to publish something before the 31st.
Oh, like that's right.
See, that's why you would have to have. That's why I asked the question, because the way Don's explaining it, if we want to make changes on the 31st, we can't have our public hearing until the 14th, and then
well,
pass
we'll
it
have
on the
14th. We have to republish it again with those new changes.
Oh, you could republish it.
And you'll have to have your.
Yeah. Oh, okay. No, there you go. We can do that.
We didn't have you published twice.
Yeah. So let's do the public hearing on the 31st. Publish what we discussed today, and if something changes on the 31st, we'll have to change and republish and have another public hearing on the same day we vote on it.
Unless people know of changes that they want to discuss, I guess, prior to this.
Get into it, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. It's just that basically we need to pretty much be in agreement on a budget today, then, what you're saying.
Well, I'd say let's get into it, and we'll discuss
no,
that.
Because you can make changes after the 31st. You just do a public hearing
we'll
on the 14th.
Public hearing on the 14th, but we've got time.
Oh, then you make another one yet.
Okay, you just vote on it the same day as the public hearing the second time.
You just don't just make everybody aware that we're getting down to that timeline where we can't, you know, let's just, if you've got something you want to do or concern, we just can't have an aha moment on the night of the 13th. It's just not going to happen.
Okay.
I've got a couple things. On page 24, just getting right into the budget, on page 24, emergency manager's budget, there's money in here for a vehicle on here. I'd like to see that taken out. Communication equipment at 10 grand again. That's in line with actual expenses, I believe. But I just saw that. Let's see, the line 5-0301. We're probably okay with the vehicle we have. How do I do this? Do I have to propose that, and we have to vote on each change, or do
no,
we just?
No, I mean, it's just a discussion. So if people want to do that, I know that vehicle we've got out there that you're talking. I think he's talking about the 3/4-ton Chevy GMC. It's got a lot of equipment and stuff, and I know that its rust is starting to rust pretty good on the rocker panels there. I don't know any other condition of it other than, and I drive rusty vehicles, so it don't bother me. But
and the other option you have too is if you like the percent that we're at 2.88%. I can move that money into miscellaneous general if you don't want it to show in that budget, and we have those dollars there in case something does happen. I mean, that's an option too.
And I guess that would be. Let me, Eric. I'll interrupt you here, and I'll apologize later. So let's ask for forgiveness versus permission. Is that it? So, if you go back and look at the sheet, and Myron jumped into it a little bit early, and I guess that's where I think it's important to look at. If you go back and you look at the percentage increases, the county tax asking request. Now, I will reference the bond issue, which is the other column that's there, and note that those were both voter-approved bonds. One was the courthouse, and the other is the road. And so that is what I consider where the board asked the taxpayers if they want to tax themselves, and by consensus, they voted yes. So if you go back to the county tax, county request, and that's basically our operational expenses, if you look at the percentage we're proposing this year is 2.88. The year before was 1%. The year before that, 1.6%. Now, we had a jump there in 3.5, but I think that was the year we bought a lot of equipment. I think we knew that and that we were going to be doing that. 2012, it was a 2%. Lest we forget, back in 2011-12, we actually asked less money from the taxpayers. Now, it wasn't a windfall of less, but it was actually a reduction in tax asking. If you go back to 2010, 2011, 4.6%. Now, I believe that the 9-10 budget, that was, we were immersed. I think that was the first, that was approved before Danny and I were on the board. I think that was when they were doing the courthouse renovation. So if you go back and you look, say, 6-7 years, we've had some very meager increases there. And I think that to try and do the same thing,
I think we're on the right path to try and stay under a 3%. I would agree with Dawn that we do have the ability to move some funds around so that if something does happen, we've got a little bit of cash. Some people like to be negative and use, say, slush fund. Well, there's no slush fund that we have out there, but there are dollars that have to be set aside for unknown expenses that may come up that you haven't planned on, because basically a budget is your best guess based on prior experience and hoping nothing bad happens in the future. That's basically what a budget is, and you try to get as close as you can.
And I will clarify, too, when we talk about changes, if there's some changes, as long as it's within the same fund, we won't have to publish anything. So if we move, like we're talking here, out of emergency management into something else, or sheriff into something else, or whatever, as long as it's under the 0100, my published figure is still correct, so we don't have to worry about
that. That's paid out of the general fund.
So 0100 is the general fund, but if it was something moved from road
right.
to something else, then that's a change okay. in the, how it's published.
Do we still go through and talk about specifics like this?
Well, I think it's fine, but what I wanted to start with was to say, how does the board feel about 2.88%? Do we need to go back and, you know, I guess I feel fairly comfortable about 2.88.
I guess my personal feeling is I like to see a little less increase. Someplace, find, cut some places someplace in here to get that lower.
If you
lower.
Cut around 30,000, you could get to 2.5, just a little over 2.5.
I realize wages are fixed. I realize that part, but in anything else, there's some fat we can cut, and I'd like to cut a little harder if we could.
It's good that Gus is here because I have some ideas.
But in regards to the 2.88, I mean, our employee salaries are going up 2.5%, right?
2%.
And our rock and gravel bids went up, what'd you figure, 6.5% in 6 months? And we've taken two of those. I mean, those are pretty major increases that you just can't come back 13% of your rock and gravel. I mean, you might be able to find some areas to take some from, but that's a lot of the expense.
There's the expense there. I think there's some places where the increases have been really lean, but there's probably some places that we could lean up a little bit, and you're not talking a percent, but you whittle down a little bit here and a little bit there, it adds up.
Before you get to individual ones, though, I think we really need to come to a decision on the 2.88% and how we're going to handle that.
And philosophically, what Dawn and I looked at is, again, we were not going to bring an over 10% increase in tax asking based on budget requests for this board. We were not going to do that. And Dawn and I said, let's start with 3%. Let's see if we can get under 3%. And that was kind of our motive. And we did not go line item by line item. We looked at the total package in the budget, the bottom right-hand number, because when we approve Gus's budget, he's responsible for the line items. We're responsible for the right-hand number that we give him. And so we went through and tried to look at the two departments that had the largest request, Road and Bridge and the Sheriff's Department, as a percentage of the entire budget, because, you know, 10% of 100,000 is a lot different than 10% of a million. So we looked at the total amount as well. And so we tried to go back to those and come up with a dollar amount, and then try to ask the department head or the elected official, you figure out where you can whittle that down, but we got to get this off. 10% is just ridiculous, and there's just no way that was going to happen. But I also, you know, if you look at the places to cut, Road and Bridge is a big one. That'd be, and I, you know,
but there's Road and Bridge. We took 500,000 out of for equipment initially, and then approximately another 500,000.
No, it was 560,000, which was gravel equipment, which we moved out, and then we just took an additional
300.
Well, but we took it out of his budget, but we didn't remove the project, which was armor coating. We took 200,000 out of inheritance to pay us. So we didn't reduce the project. We just changed the funding and said, well, we're going to use basically sinking fund dollars or our savings account dollars, and we'll leave 200 and some thousand in there as general obligation on the taxes. But we did pull off 100,000, and we were looking at some, and some of those, based on previous experience, there seemed to be a lot bigger planned expenditures than we had done for 2 to 3 years prior. So that's just, okay, between these funds, if we can whittle out $100,000, which could be $25,000, $25,000, $25,000, or whatever that would be,
That's how we did that. So it was 560, which was the capital equipment, which came right off the top.
And we can live with that because we've got caught up a little bit on some of the equipment. Mostly there's like two or three items that was important to Galen and I, but we can get along without them. Is what I'm saying. So most of those were capital improvements. You're right, Matt, on that. So I understand.
I mean, if we just if we look at and you pull the 560 right off the top because we had talked about that. We knew that.
And I'm not saying I disagree with it. I agree with it. I agreed with that right away too. But I'm with Terry. I wouldn't mind seeing peeling this back just a little bit more yet. I think you guys have.
I think you got to look at Road and Bridge as a percentage of you got to go there. And I know you're sensitive, sensitive to that. But basically, we would go from a 5.43 to a 5.334.
The only issue that I do have on these things, this equipment gets used yearly. If you start backing off too far, you're going to create additional expenses, repairs, everything else in there. So that's why I hesitate to back it off too, back them off too long, because it's going to cost you in the long run.
And it's a great discussion, but we also, if we go back at some point, we're going to have to catch up. So if you don't do a kind of a stair step deal, if we go flat for too long, then you will see a huge stair.
Yeah.
Because we will be so far behind. And so that's where, and I think the board very appropriately, 2%, 3%, 1%, 2%, I think bouncing around in there, I think that's, that's pretty appropriate. But we're going to get, at some point, we may be there. But
probably,
yeah,
if you don't have the capital improvements, you won't be able to increase. Because our
that's right.
So yeah, I mean, if there's ideas, if you've looked through this, I want to just to kind of present that if there's a particular percentage that somebody is hung up on and wants, because I admit Don and I said it's not going to be 10%, we're going to try and get under 3%, and that's kind of what we strove for. And then we went through and said, what's that dollar amount? Okay, now let's go see how we can move that stuff around. So if there's a percentage you want to be at, that would be my suggestion.
John, go ahead.
Well, I think in the face of the fact that we did take out that equipment from Road and Bridge, which you can do 1 year, but you can't keep doing it.
No.
It's going to be there again. And when we look at how much material costs are increasing for rock and gravel, that is probably a reasonable amount. You don't like it. You'd like it to be less, but...
We're paying for Hickory Road, too.
We're paying for Hickory Road.
We can look at other things in specific instead of just percentages, though, too. I mean, the percentage is a good
right.
way to gauge ourselves.
We can do that. But first, we really need to come up with this percent increase, and then you kind of back into what you're going to cut out or whatever. Gary?
I guess the one thing, if we want to look at decreasing that percentage some more, just being Zarek brought up emergency management, if you take a peek at emergency management, And year after year, the budgeted expense is $200,000, and we end up spending $80,000 to $90,000. So if you want to take some money out of that percentage, look at your budgeted expense, and then you can look at that and see we're way over budgeting in some of these departments.
That was one of the things that I was looking at is we consistently shoot high on some of these, and I assume that goes back to general then. I mean, it is a safety cushion, but that's where I wonder if we go through some of these individually first, that may change our budget on its own. Now, maybe we don't want to do that to keep that, to stay around that 2% actual increase. Maybe we want to put it into this or put it into that. But
to a certain degree, I agree with you. To a certain degree, you don't want to get too flat to where you're going backwards. So to a certain degree, you want to keep some of that safety there. But like I said, if we're over budgeting in these places and not spending it, it seems silly to continue to take more and more from the taxpayer if we don't need to.
And we don't want them to spend it if they don't need it either. We don't want it to be there where they think we got to spend this or...
Well, in that...
7 years ago, when I first became finance chairman, I visited with all the department heads and elected officials, and I said, we don't want to get into this budget appropriation, dumping your budget, whatever you want to call it. If you don't need it at the end of the year, don't spend it. And if because there, and then we will try and not cut you back. Because previous, if they didn't spend it, it was cut. And so that incentivized people to spend every daggum penny they had.
And that's the thing, I don't want to get into that either. But
and that's what happened.
No, you don't want that.
But here, I mean, just looking at, since the sheriff's here, I mean, we look at...
Well, let's go back. You brought up the vehicle and Tim's not here, and it was on the agenda. We were going to talk about the budget, so I would have expected this room to be full of elected officials and department heads, but apparently they don't care. So let's go through it. This has been on the agenda every daggum time, and I see the sheriff there, and God bless him for showing up. Nobody else is here. This is a county budget where we're going to go through and take taxpayer money and spend for operations in the bureaucracy of government. Why aren't they here?
I totally agree with you.
Don's here. They trust me, Roger. But we've got questions.
I think we talked to people. A good faith thing. And I'm not trying to defend them. I'm just saying, if you had a question like you wanted to talk to the clerk of the court or something, she'd be here. I think there's a good relationship
on
with the board and the official.
I'm not beating Tim up. I'm just saying there's an opportunity here for us to adjust the budget. How's that going to affect if we take that vehicle out, Tim?
Hold on. One thing I want to say is we had this discussion in emergency management in the morning. Eric, remind me, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought we said we weren't doing a vehicle.
Right. That's what we talked about before. When we did talk about this in committee meetings, we said for what we're doing, we don't think we need a different vehicle.
Let's pull it out. I mean, there's 35.
Our consensus at the committee meeting was that we probably weren't going to give him a vehicle. Now, however,
but he was
did ask about if he was ever to get a vehicle, he had to include it in the budget. Okay, I mean that's what we all told him.
That's why I wonder. Looking at this, is like that boy Tim. He tried to stick it in there.
No.
Let's go through this.
Okay.
But
you've got a request to pull that vehicle out.
Okay.
And we'll go through and we can run those again. Because we've got time. So.
And where do you guys go with the total dollar amount? These are just specific things I looked at. Okay, jumping back a little ways, it'd be on...
Okay.
That was on page 24, line 5-0301.
Okay. There's been a request. I know we're discussing budget, but we also have a closed session for litigation update on here. This is costing us. What does everybody want to do? You want to do budget or you want to have our closed session?
I think the budget could go quite a while.
I do too. They're sitting here already, so let's go into closed session. We're going to take a 10-minute break first, and then we'll come back, or 5-minute break, and then we'll come back and have a closed session with our legal team from the Beatrice 6, and then we will come back and have a budget discussion after that. So,
okay, you're going on.
Let's go back in. Matt made a good point.
All right.
10:27 on the clock, and we the county board is back in session, and we're waiting for one other person to go into closed session. So we're going to talk a little bit about budget while we're sitting here.
What I'd like to that 2528, I think 25 is kind of a happy number there. But there's like on page 16, the sheriff, we're going to have him come back over. Budget expense for 15-16 was $1,168,195.62. Actual expense was $1,000,001, so we were $68,000 under budget. I believe we bought two cars in that as well, which we all need to have cars now.
That was $49,000 for the cars.
Paid for out of the budget.
And when we talk about the vehicles, I believe we are going to have to enter into negotiations in 2017 with the sheriff. And so we know because of what the CIR decides that the sheriff really
maybe the cost.
Sheriff's a figurehead basically, and anything the deputies want to do has to go through a collective bargaining agreement. And prevalent practice is providing vehicles. So
we are going to be on the hook for some vehicles. And I will say that the vehicles that they've had have been pretty maintained pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
They've got high miles, but they are holding up.
But
so we're going to be into some vehicle expenses.
From our actual expense in 15-16 to proposed budget by him or by the department for 16-17 is another $250,000, give or take. I would, and that's, I mean, we're looking at close to, I don't know what it is exactly, but it's 20 to 25% probably, isn't it, just off the top of my head. I would propose we take not his actual expense last year where we're penalizing him for not using it, but his budgeted expense from 15-16, add 2% to that, keep him in line with everybody else so it's not one that's getting away from us. We've had increases of 13, 14 to 14, 15, $100,000. 14, 15 to 15, 16, $110,000. Keep him in line with everybody else at a 2% increase. That would put us at $1,191,559. That's a fair difference from the proposed at $1,289,000, but that puts us on more of an even. There's at the city level or at the county level or at the state level, there's always one budgeted department that seems to climb fast. And I don't know if there's any specific projects or specific things that Gus has money in there for, but we're buying more electrical stuff every year that breaks down after a few years and we have to replace it at a higher dollar amount. Sooner or later, we have to stop these. I'm going to call them knickknacks again. Sooner or later, we have to stop adding knickknacks to these cars and our law enforcement and say, this is what we need. It's fun to have this other stuff. If you want to purchase it and put it on your own vehicle, you can, but we don't need it.
You have, I think, if you have that with you, and otherwise I may have it too, that you can read off what his... Why his lines were increased.
Right, but and some of the things that I pointed out, which was why I was glad Gus was here.
And
he's going to come back.
Gus was over and run over and grab Gus for us, can you?
He said he would to call him when you wanted to talk.
Yeah, no, he's over there in your office right now. So,
well, but
while we're waiting for Jennifer and stuff,
there's
yeah.
It talks about there's a dog expense in here of $20,000. I thought that was going
to. Guys, come on up to the mic. We're back in station. We're waiting for Jennifer and them to be done.
Okay.
I'll now you come over here. So we're talking about your budget a little bit.
I want to note that Gus is wielding a magazine full of ammunition.
Okay.
Well, no, there was a discussion here. We were going through your budget. The dog expense, the canine is showing up in here, and I thought that when that gentleman made that presentation to us that that wasn't going to be part of the budget.
Well, we're trying. Now, what we're doing is generating the funds for the dog.
You better tell Scott.
But the ongoing, there'll be some associated with that.
He was going to leave.
Scott's here as well.
Sitting there a little bit ago. Scott?
Is he out there?
Patsy.
He was sitting there.
I think he left because
he was going to leave.
Left. Okay.
He was going to leave because they didn't know how long we'd take going closed station. So, yeah.
The I think 20,000 in there. 20, we needed 10 for the dog. We're at that point now where we got that generated, but it's going to take about that again to get the car equipped, and some of that's getting donated from two or three donors. So that's just I need some number in there to kind of sustain as I go along for certain things. Food's being donated, vet care being donated to Humane Society. I just don't know now what it's going to take to get going on it for sustaining as we go along for it. So there's just a number in there to have something to start with above and beyond what I'm going to have donated.
Okay,
it might not even be close to that. I don't know.
The other line here is, well, and the difficulty is when it shows here, then that becomes part of the total tax asking for which we generate the levy for. So, you know, the supplies under law enforcement, historically there's been less than $20,000 except for, yeah, and then, but the budget is $57,000.
Well, about half of that's gone because that's going towards the data 911 systems that I'm doing monthly or yearly payments on. That's about $24,000 or $25,000. Wasn't it, Don? Something like that?
Oh, that's different because there's a transfer here. That shows up the...
Oh,
no.
That's the payment for what we've already paid for to get the computers and all that stuff. Now he needs these boxes to get the internet in the cars to make those computers work so we can get time and attendance going. That
so that's
is.
An too, yet?
Well, I think.
We got a meeting today, actually.
Saved before and didn't put it, we didn't pay for it then.
We thought
now
3G could run the systems.
It's not working.
Not working at all. It's got to go to 4G. Well, that's going to be, I'm sure, $15,000,
$20,000. Well, I put, you told me $16,500.
That's a rough
so
ballpark.
That's
$16,500.
I told you that would work. The supplier?
Well, everybody I talked to just says it should work, it'll just be slower. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, when we're trying to do the time and attendance stuff in it, and we can't do it, we can't access.
Time and attendance should be minimal. It's not that.
But it is. But see, when we can't access internet, we can't do anything with our systems for reports. They can't do reports in the field or nothing. They just aren't working at all. So I didn't figure that in the budget because we didn't know this was going to come up. Now it's cropping up right now.
Well, and then I called them and I asked because we were having issues with timesheets because they're all handwritten. They're not matching up with the way they think they should look. And I said, why aren't we on these computers that we bought? And so then Gus and I had a conversation. I said, we need to be done with this stuff with time and attendance. So
what we've got is a 14.6% increase in your budget from last year. That's why we're looking at that, and that's why I sent you that text yesterday and said, hey, we took $50,000 of your budget as a pack of as a total package of trying to reduce by $550,000. So you were
right.
Roughly $50,000 of that trying to reduce that. And so,
well, and like I say, a large chunk of that, there's still payment comes out for the next 2 years after this year. So there's $24,000 gone there.
Yeah.
Two cars were in, but we did it or not, I don't know.
You got $124,000 for vehicles.
Well, that includes installation, transition, everything.
But not two cars.
$124,000. You
two cars.
Have the, let's see.
Oh, we put that down to $74,000.
$74,000.
Yeah.
Because when I put cars in, I always try putting that
then
in line.
Then you're better, yeah.
It's about $6,000 to $10,000, depending on which kind of equipment I can use.
Out of that
the
line
car, okay.
And where to take
we
it
talked
right
about.
Now. He can move it around.
If we need cars, if they all need cars to drive, which could happen, that doesn't mean the dollars go up to buy those cars. We may keep the dollars the same, and that has to get rid of some of them or something. I mean, if that's their choice, if their union makes.
Well, that's something you have to negotiate. This will be up in the union. You know it's going to come up.
Yeah.
What's happened now is because we haven't gotten routine to replace one or two cars every year because the board didn't want to do that in years past.
But you've done a good job on that.
Well, I have, but trouble is now I have cars that I can't send to training. I just happened to go to Colorado last week. I had to send our old transport van because I don't trust the patrol car for distance trips. So I can take my mothballs, which I did four of them, and fix them back up since things went south that time on the union. But at some point, we just got to realize that's part of doing business. It's a mobile office, and now that we have the mobile data's in there, they're even in there more and gone out of the office. So
what's the mobile data systems? They sit at their houses then?
No, that's in the car.
That's in the car. It sits at their house in their front yard instead of being used.
When in the car they use it, but yeah, otherwise not being used.
What do we have for line item for vehicles? Vehicle, what is in the budget for vehicles?
If you look at your new car.
I don't have the sheet in front.
It would be
for transition of the two I'm doing right now.
No, not why. I just wanted to put the dollar amount for a year.
It was 124, but when Dawn, I asked her to take 50 out, she pulled it out of there, so it shows 74, I think.
Yeah. And actually, the new ones show 90-some because I moved some money out of another line into the vehicle. So it shows 90.
Yeah, we have to do that. So.
Some thousand now.
Eric, there again here. What we need to do is come up with a total dollar budget for Gus. We can talk individually and everything on all that, but we need to, as a board, come up with Gus. This is your budget bottom line, and then he's gonna end up
that's
over
true.
The year.
That's
adjusted.
Not our concern where yeah. it goes. It's
right. Hopefully, I know a little more about that better yeah. than you would. But
yeah,
yes, that's Myron's right.
Yeah.
Well. I proposed a 2% increase from your budget last year. That may not be realistic. It was around $250,000 more than last year's budget. I'd propose a 5% increase from your 16. I mean, if we're just looking at percentages, instead of a 14, I'd propose a 5%.
Before I say that.
Well, like Matt said before, they're best guess estimate on a budget. And it could be last year I turned some back, the next year I might not be able to. It just
That's
depends.
The thing, instead of going off of what you actually spend, if we go off of what you budgeted last year for a rough estimate, a 5% increase would be closer to the number that Matt had proposed here, but that'd be $1,226,605.41 If I did that right, a 5% right. increase from the 15-16.
That's what 5% is.
That would be what I would propose for an increase this year. Which
what I submit?
You submitted $1,339,000
Well, they'll definitely probably take the cars out. That's the first thing I'll have to look at doing because I have to have, you know, vests and guns, safety things I have to have. So that's something I'll just have to look at and determine.
Let me just. So you started with $1.339 million. If we pull $50,000 out of that, that gets us down to $1.289 million. What Eric is proposing is to go from 1.289 to 1.226. So we're not off a whole.
It's fairly close. It's a lot of money again.
That's a 5% increase over the planned expenditures last year, which were still there were $60,000 that you didn't use. So we're not even using the 1.1 of which was actual expenditures. We're going back and using the planned expenditures and doing 5% on top of that. So really,
an additional 68 you did turn back last year. But if it's like we talked, we can't go off of what's actually spent. Otherwise, that makes you want to just
well. And what happened last year is that was the first year really put some money in the budget.
Right.
Some things didn't pan out for us, like trainings couldn't get around to it. So that's why a lot of that come back. Otherwise, I guarantee you that would have been a lot closer to the bottom line.
And the year before, we had to adjust the budget.
Yep.
We had to add some right at the end. We had to put some back in and stuff. So.
Can you live with the 1.226?
Well, I'll pay that into next year. I mean, I don't know, Matt. I honestly don't. It all comes down to what I have to do by statute, what I can just space off. You know, that's what it comes down to. Example, talent inspections. That don't sound like a big deal, but we do a ton of those. We have like 20 buses they call. They want us to go do 20 buses, and I have calls like that for car lots or anything else. Well, the courtesy, if we can, we'll try to slip out and do those when we're out and about. Those kind of things might go away, you know, just because I don't have to do that. I just do as a courtesy to the public to do that. So,
how about if we give Gus a half hour to crunch his numbers and come back?
Yeah, let's, Gus. We'll get a hold of you again when we're done with our closing.
Okay.
How about that? You come back over.
What do you want it down to?
If you could get down to $1,111,000.
Write it on this number.
Yeah, your number you gave him was 1.226.
Okay. I said that would be great.
1.226?
If you could get down to $1,111,000, that'd be outstanding.
Okay.
That would be
$1,100,000.
You know what? If you get down to
Gus, we'll give you a call when we're done.
Okay.
Thank you.
I got another idea for her before I leave.
Yep.
I didn't say it'd be nice.
Okay. We have a closed session on the agenda for litigation. I'll entertain a motion to go into closed session at 10:42 on the clock.
Second.
And we're going to closed session necessary for the protection of the public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of individual. And this will be what?
Who made the motion?
Lytle made the motion. Team and seconded the motion. And this is for our visiting with our attorneys for the Beatrice 6. Vote. 7-0 in favor. Right. Yeah, I guess we're up. I thank you guys for coming down.
There's still more than I like, but
I guess, what do you guys want to do first? We'd like an update of where we sit, I guess, first, and then we have thoughts and ideas. We've talked a lot. I'll just say this. We've had several other meetings and talked a lot as a board since the judgments came down. So we have ideas, and then we want to run them all by you guys, and I'm sure you do, too.
Okay.
We're open to ideas.
Okay, but update us a little bit on where we sit today. Again, you filed
the... We filed a motion for a judgment as a matter of law, a motion for new trial 2 weeks ago. We should get a response from them today. Their response is due today.
Oh, it is due today.
It's due today. And then we get, I think, 7 days to reply. Tomorrow we are filing an opposition to their attorney's fees and their costs of $1.8 million.
Quick question on that. There was a report in the paper that when you file,
Well, and let me explain.
Okay.
There's taxable costs and there's non-taxable costs.
Okay.
Their order was for attorney's fees and non-taxable costs. So at the same time they filed for attorney's fees, one attorney filed a taxable cost, a bill of costs, I guess you call it. That's what I was opposing, not the whole entire thing. And so in the paper, it looked crazy.
Yeah,
it's like
bad.
I'm objecting to $42. I was basically just objecting to the service costs for the people who were dismissed, either before a trial or we got verdicts in our favor.
Okay.
That's all that was about. And Herb Friedman filed a separate bill of costs last week, two weeks ago, Friday, and we're going to oppose that as well. Just based on, he's included costs from the state wrongful conviction action. So that's kind of where we are right now.
That shouldn't have had nothing to do with us.
What's that? That's right.
And that many of our opposition to the fees, the attorney fees as well, includes time. They've included time spent on that state case.
And the deposition costs. And so I think I've calculated a reduction of over $100,000 just based on that being assigned to the wrongful conviction action, to their pardon hearings, legislative committee hearings, expungement hearings, things that we shouldn't have to pay for.
Their application for attorney's fees and supporting documents were about like that. And we've, of course, divided them up and gone through them line by line. And Melanie has been working on the brief, and if we say it's due tomorrow, and maybe we'll be done by tomorrow. And actually, we spent a trip down, and we'll probably spend the trip back talking about what other objections, specific objections, we ought to be making. And we're just sitting over here going through the computer, checking some other stuff on these objections. They've done three things that we think are objectionable. The first thing is, we've already talked about, they've included time that was actually spent on the state case, not the federal case, and we shouldn't pay for that. Secondly, they have billed for costs in a couple of instances that we've already paid. Doesn't amount to much, but we've already paid it. We're not going to pay it twice. Thirdly, they billed for things that we don't think are proper within the rules of what you can ask for, ask the federal court to order you to be paid for, in a couple of respects. One, they just don't identify what it is. Herbie's got $30,000 worth of bills that are emails between he and what we believe to be our people in his office. Don't know that because there isn't enough information in his billing for us to make that determination, but that's our best guess. So we're objecting to things like that. There are some bills, not a whole lot, but some in which people attended depositions. Well, yeah, they were there. They didn't do anything except just sit there. And they're double billing for that deposition, the attorney that actually asked the question, the attorney that's just there observing.
Sometimes there were three attorneys for the same client. So we just don't think that we should have to pay, or you guys should have to pay.
It's duplicative.
Yeah.
And then the other thing we're asking for in the brief is a reduction because of the results they achieved in some instances. Those are mostly related to the appeal, where the appeal was taken and they were unsuccessful in four out of six issues that were raised on the appeal, for example. We're asking the judge to go through those bills and reduce those. We're probably going to ask for some more things, but that's the general outline. Having said all that, we're not going to reduce that bill a whole lot. We might go from 1.8 to
1.5.
If we're really lucky, we might go to 1.2, but I don't think we'll get that kind of reduction.
Seems like we're kind of talking about peanuts here compared to the big issue.
We are.
Yeah.
But it's the immediate issue we're dealing with today, and that's why we're sort of concentrating on it today, and that's what we really have foremost in our mind, and it's probably easiest for us to talk about that aspect.
because until they file their answers back on your motion for a trial, you're not dealing with that.
That's correct.
Right. Which you will be shortly.
Next week we will. We have 7 days to reply, which I'm going to do that week. So I'll reply to that response.
Matt?
I have a question about, as we're putting the budget together here, what planned expenditures can we look for in the near future that we need to make sure that we have in the budget? Are there some of these that are going to be pushed out that may not roll around for a while, or what do we need?
Well, we anticipate that CUSP's not going to give us a motion for new trial or judgment as a matter of law. We're going to have to appeal up to the Eighth Circuit. So that will be filed. The brief on that probably will be due. I don't know how your budget goes.
Budget cycle. They're in
July 1st.
So it'll probably...
we probably won't have any bills that will have to be paid in this budget cycle, with the possible exception of some attorney's fees if they prevail on appeal and we don't take it. Don't file out yet.
Our new budget actually started July 1st.
Yes. So we will have some.
So I guess what Matt's asking is
not flat.
No, if we take the appeals, the Eighth Circuit is not likely to issue an opinion before sometime May or June.
Yeah, I mean, it will be a lot
of next year.
Of 2017.
Yeah.
You're right.
But we will still do
the briefs and all
that. So you don't anticipate that, I'm sorry, I always forget, it's the new trial or judgment in, what is that called, judgment in?
As a matter of law.
I thought that's what you guys were excited about, that's what
we are excited about it. We're excited about it, and we have to file it in order to talk to the Eighth Circuit about it. Because we have to, in order to appeal, we have to
have. Assume Koff will give it to you. It'll have to.
We don't think Koff will give it to us due to his history in this case, because he actually said when I asked for judgment as a matter of law during trial orally, he said I'd be crazy to give it to you because of the way the Eighth Circuit has qualified immunity. Because he's been overruled.
So I think he's leery of getting reversed a third time. So that's why we think he's not going to give it.
So attorney fees, is there any chance? Always a chance.
Yes.
But that we're going to have to pay either 1.5 or 1.8 or whatever the number is in the 16-17 budget year.
I think that will be stayed.
I think the appeal will take you. Into
past next July.
I think the first budget year you have to be concerned about is 17-18.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
Because that'll go up with the judgment on appeal.
Okay. So we'll have your attorney fees. I just didn't. Yeah. As we're trying to lean the budget down and cut stuff out, if there's a big matzo ball hanging out there that we need to, then it.
The good thing about being the county. Is that when we appeal, we can get a stay, and so the judgment can't be executed against the county, and that would also include the judgment for attorney's fees. And so we'll have a judgment before we appeal it, probably on the fees.
I assume that he will make a decision on the attorney's fees and our motions at the same time.
That's what I think.
Go
ahead.
If Comp doesn't give us that judgment or a new trial, it goes to the Eighth Circuit.
Right.
So then they decide whether we get a new trial or how does that work when it goes there.
They could just affirm it. They could just say, okay, the jury verdict.
And then it's done?
Right, and it would be done.
Unless we petition for cert
to the U.S. Supreme Court again. But they could also give us a new trial, or they could set aside our main goal, to be honest, is trying to get the county out.
Right.
Because
that's what we want
to
do.
And they think, because obviously the plaintiffs think, well, this is the deep pocket, and it is. I mean, versus the two individuals, this is where the money is. And so based on, and I think we talked about this the last time we were here, the best chance we have is because of their jury verdict as to the county. But... so the two officers probably, I don't know. I mean, I can't tell you what the Eighth Circuit's going to do, but I think we can also revisit possibly the whole policymaker issue again, maybe.
Well, isn't that the biggest thing, that DeWitt was held not liable?
And
that's
no
why
conspiracy.
We were drug
and
in the
and there was no conspiracy.
And that's why we were drug in the first place, correct?
Well, the right. Eighth Circuit, yeah, because the Eighth Circuit says you guys are not it. It's DeWitt is the policymaker as far as investigations of the sheriff's office goes.
Right.
And so it's so in opposite to the verdict, because the verdict says, well, DeWitt didn't do anything wrong. And there's no evidence at all that he even knew there was an alleged reckless investigation or manufacture of false evidence happening. And there's no conspiracy. So that gets rid of all of Dick Smith's stuff, too.
Well, I mean, to me, that's huge.
I think it's huge, too. We're hoping
anybody
that
with some common sense would take a look at that, I would
evidently
think.
Evidently, the jury didn't.
Well, no.
I think the jury was looking for a funding source.
That's right.
Honestly, I think,
the jury saw that DeWitt did nothing, and I don't know that they understood the county liability instruction or if they just disregarded it, because obviously they wanted to give them money and they know that Searcy and DeWitt, Searcy and Price.
Who presents that to them? You all?
What do you mean? Yeah.
Presents
that argument.
This argument that we're only liable if DeWitt is liable.
Well, they get a jury instruction.
You mean to the jury?
Yeah.
The judge instructs them on that.
Judge wrote an instruction that essentially said you have to...
I can pull it up.
You have to pull it.
You have to read it by word or by deed, the sheriff has to... it could be a single decision. It doesn't have to be a written policy. Has to affirmatively...
Direct.
Agree.
Isn't that you all that would affirm that to the jury, though, multiple times and make sure that they know?
Yeah, we did.
And they just none of them understood it?
In fact, we asked for a special...
I mean, do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, we asked for a
special
to be given to the jury so they would have to look at it and say, okay, the sheriff...
did this.
He ordered it, agreed to it,
he did this.
Asked to it. And the judge would not give it.
And that's one of our... errors.
But
we believe it's there.
It's a discretion standard, which is really high, so it's hard to get the judge reversed on not giving it. But I'm just thinking, if that jury had stopped and really thought about it, I don't know that they would have gone there.
I think they probably found a conspiracy.
They would have had to have found a conspiracy.
I believe they felt, and again, you guys were there, but it just seems like they were going to find...
against
these people needed some money because they were innocent.
Right, and that's another thing we're arguing, is that was...
erroneously, but
yeah.
Then they just went back in, wanted to get the hell out of there after a couple meals, and said, bang, county's liable, and they didn't think about, God dang, we're screwing this up.
Because
we got to say, DeWitt was right along with Dick Smith, which was part of the plaintiff's argument. The two big boys were carving this whole thing.
Right.
They would meet and decide what was going to do.
I think the jury
really missed that.
That was their argument, that these two met and decided how it was going to go?
That's conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
That's their conspiracy.
Dick Smith is the conspiracy. That's the only way they could talk about Dick Smith.
But they refer to him as King Dick. King Richard, excuse me.
Yep.
King Richard.
King Richard, right.
Dick was something else other people called it. I don't want to beat my own horse, but before... we even tried this the last time. Remember, one of the things they said to you is, if we get a bad jury, we're in trouble. We got a bad jury. The jury was bound and determined that they were going to enter a judgment for those plaintiffs. And obviously, they just went nuts on the damages. I mean, they picked a particular number per day they were going to give them and just multiplied it. And that number they picked is about 10 times what any of those people would have earned in any given day. So that's an outrageous number that they chose. It's not so outrageous that the plaintiffs can't point to other verdicts in which defendants in civil rights cases got even more money. They had $41 million in New York, for example, for five people.
Well, heck, in Sampson v. Livers, they settled for $1 million for 3 months.
Yeah. So
in jail.
The whole point is we're not guilty and we don't owe them anything. That's my point. I don't want to miss that. We're not guilty.
We don't miss it.
Right.
So we don't disagree with you.
Okay, then. You have 7 days to... answer their whatever
reply.
Then after the seventh, that that, then it's up to COP.
Yeah. Right. And he can take whatever time he needs. If it's one day or 50 days, he can take the amount of time he needs. And then he will issue an opinion on those motions.
And it could vary from no change to
substantial change.
Substantial change.
He could even say, he could say the damages are excessive and remit it. And either the plaintiff accepts the lesser damages or we get a new trial.
Do you guys get a, is there any oral argument or is it just briefs? Okay, all right, it's briefs.
On the motions?
Yeah.
He can order. This court's just briefs.
Okay, well, I just wondered. He can order a hearing if he wants to, but he doesn't generally do that.
But you already filed your reasons, or our reasons why, then they answer that. Now you have 7 days to file against theirs, and then, but they're done.
They're done.
They're done. Okay.
And did we send,
yeah, we
send you a copy of the brief, right? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, between you guys and Valentino, I'm getting a lot of reading done.
I bet you are.
I know. I was going to call Craig Nelson and go, "Hey, do you need a part-time attorney?"
Well, and I'm sure we've been trying to keep you updated. That you know, Joel Nelson and Joe Bacon, that we've hired them to.
Joel called me.
I sent a letter to Joel today. I talked to him yesterday. That contained all the letters I sent to every insurance carrier that we knew back in 2009, and all the responses that I got at that time.
At that time.
And the NIRMA letter of 2009. You have the 2009
right.
letter.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you got the email that I got back from Larry, right?
On
coverage.
So I think he has everything that we. Yeah. Did in 2009 and the responses that we got.
No,
as far as I know, I don't think he asked me whether Paul Douglas wrote any letters to insurance companies. I think that Paul and I talked about that, and I was going to do all the contact of insurance companies. And as far as I know, I contacted every insurance company that could conceivably have had any liability in the matter.
Yeah.
Including the National District Attorneys Association. They didn't have any policy. In case you're wondering, I still don't think they have any policy to that. So that aspect of it.
Yeah. We visited with them about we're not saying we have insurance or not. We want it, the letter said they're going to give us an opinion on Beatrice Six and...
Or Nelson, you mean. Right.
Nelson did and stuff, so... I guess, is there any more questions about this? Otherwise, we have some thoughts about how we want to proceed. We're going to throw out some thoughts.
Okay.
A lot of it comes back to when you guys were down here before and what Pat's comments were. Judge Kopp, it's an unknown what he does, but Pat made the comment that whatever decision Kopp will make, it's going to be appealed to the 8th Circuit Court.
Yes. Correct. Right, by our party.
Part of our discussion is... this is nothing against you guys. We feel we need, we visited with Roger, we feel we need some attorneys that have had real good success there. And like I said, this isn't nothing against you guys, and we're not dropping here, nothing like that. We feel we need to give you guys help when we go to the 8th Circuit Court. That's our one shot. And we haven't had good success there. Or at least what they've done to us. We don't care. We visit with Roger. We don't care if you guys go to St. Louis or where you guys go, or with Roger, with this board. We need another attorney or two that regularly visits the 8th Circuit. And you guys give us your thoughts back on this, okay?
You have somebody in mind?
We have nobody in mind. Nobody. And we're not.
Pat, one of the things they asked me about it, and I says, there are some attorneys that do nothing but appellate work.
Right.
And again, I says, I would, 8th Circuit, I know where they practice in St. Louis. Once in a while, they come to Omaha. That's what I know about them. I mean, and I know it's important with any court that you're familiar with how they work and stuff. And I'm not being critical. I'm just, I don't know. And they're asking, because like you said, this is it. Getting in a chance, for cert to the Supreme Court, they seemed like they were dismissive of our last effort.
which even though everybody else out there says, this is huge.
It's crazy.
And I mean, Barton's letter, I think, outlines it. But again, you got to get the Supreme Court attention.
And part of our discussion is, you guys are there the whole time. You guys are there. But how do we, I guess, up the expertise, I guess. And that isn't downgrading you guys at all, but there are people out there that's what they do, I guess.
There are appellate specialists in a variety of the larger law firms that they just handle appellate cases. There are even some people that purport to be United States Supreme Court experts in petitions for cert. The difficulty usually is in finding them and determining whether or not they really have the expertise you're looking for. It doesn't do you any good if we hire somebody that isn't going to add a sufficient level of expertise,
correct,
to increase the value of the brief. So what you're really saying to us is, either we or somebody look around for somebody we think would give us that level of expertise.
Give us a boost up.
And I don't think any of us have any objection to doing that.
Okay. Yeah.
No.
Well, and part of our discussion was, I don't know when you're going to need to start filing your stuff for 8th Circuit Court.
Well, but if we're going to find somebody, we need to start trying to find him.
That's
now.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. We don't want to wait until our brief is due to be
looked around. No, we're not. We don't want that. And
it's a huge record. I mean, that's the thing.
Well, anybody you bring here, you're going to have to a lot of education. I mean, just period. A lot of bringing them up to speed on what's going on.
And in my own words here, not as the board. Once again, we said we got our asses handed to us here. We got spanked, we got thrown in the shed, kicked, and stuff thrown on top of us. I mean, and if you don't think so, write the check for the goddamn dollar amount. We got our asses handed to us. Now, is that all your fault? No. You can be completely right and lose a case, and you can be completely wrong and win the case. So I think what we really need to do is say, what can we do to complement things? Is there somebody that knows the ins and outs here? You guys have to be there. You know the basis of everything. That takes a long time to get all that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if it costs more money to get a jury selector.
Well, we already know that's what we're doing.
I don't know anything about law, and I know that. I mean, that's the frustrating thing, I guess. I don't know anything about the legal system, and if I'm going to go to court, I'm going to get somebody helping me select a jury, because everything I heard from you, the only reason I say that is just listening to you, Pat. Jury, jury, jury. Well, I would think, well, that's an important part. That's what we want to get, is somebody picking our jury. If there's a lawyer...
Let me just stop you for just a moment. We don't get to pick a jury.
I'm sorry, yes.
We only get to pick who's not going to be on
right,
the jury.
Right.
And, yeah, there's a group of jury selection people. I think we're even going to have a TV show this fall about jury selection experts, apparently.
Just what we need.
Yeah, exactly. And some of them are pretty good, and some of them are bad. And I've been in jury trials where jury experts picked a jury, and they didn't do a very good job. And I've been in trials, this one included, where it appears at least that the jury expert did a pretty good job. Clearly they had the intention of having a principally female jury panel, and with some characteristics that worked for them. So, yeah, it happened.
And fairly young. But my question is in regards, even if we get the right jury expert, can we get the right jury in eastern Nebraska?
Depends on what the panel is.
We can't control who they bring in for the panel.
Yeah.
We have no control over that. That's done entirely by the court, and it's done on a random basis.
I mean, there has been so many headlines across the Lincoln and Omaha papers about the, you know.
Wrongfully convicted.
Wrongfully convicted, you know.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, you have to question people who say they don't know anything about this case. Really?
Yeah.
Who doesn't know anything about this case?
How do you live in this
How can you live in Nebraska and not know?
And we can't move it out of Nebraska or western Nebraska.
Well, that, I kind of thought about that before our last trial. Maybe we should try to move it out to North Platte, which is where the other federal courthouse is. But I don't even know if they use that anymore.
I think they've closed that courtroom, and they use one of the district courtrooms when they go out there. I think that's right. But in any event, you have a pretty high burden to move a case.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to convince them to move it to Douglas County.
I don't think Douglas County would help.
That probably doesn't help a whole lot. If you move it to North Platte, I'm not sure how much that's going to help you either. I will tell you that judges, and particularly for jury trials, a long one like this, would be extremely resistant
moving up
to going to North Platte. But certainly, that's something we can explore.
Pat, just a comment. I've had numerous people say, you know, whatever it takes, and the cost, I shouldn't say irrelevant, but find that one person that has an expertise in that seventh court.
Eighth
court down there. I'm in favor of you looking around. And
we're taking your advice, and we're going to do that, and we will do some exploration about specialists on
eighth area. But I wouldn't have any idea who that person would be. I mean, you guys practice on the federal level.
We need two expertise. That is, somebody who's expert in eighth area court procedure. We think we're pretty good at that. But secondly, they have to be knowledgeable in civil rights law, and I think the civil rights knowledge is even more important. Because the basic mistake that the Eighth Circuit has made is not distinguishing between the sheriff's office and the county. They're just wrong. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it. Their conclusion that the sheriff is a policymaker for the county is simply wrong. And I hope that if they don't reverse that decision in this next appeal, that the Supreme Court will take a look at it. I don't know what's going to happen with the Supreme Court after this next election. We're going to have one empty spot that's going to be filled. We got a pretty
good
court right now.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, I just want to, before you get to that, I mean, this is, you know, I mean, I read Bargan's letter, which, again, I think tracks exactly what our theory of the case was.
It was our argument.
My thought on that is, you know, why isn't, you know, like insurance companies? Because, I mean, NIRMA is going to take a look at this, and they got to go, what the hell? We're going to have to reassess all of our policies. Sheriff can set policy for every one of these 93 counties, holy mother.
We had contacted some of those people early on saying you ought to be interested in an amicus brief here.
Right, yeah.
And we didn't get any response from any.
But I don't know, does that help as far as trying to get an audience with the Supreme Court?
Yeah.
When you have more people such as insurance companies who...
I don't know if it helps with the Supreme Court, but it does, of course, after cert's granted, because then you write a brief.
Okay, I know nothing about how you get an audience with the Supreme Court. Because to me, this is a huge issue, both from the standpoint of liability and financially.
I know. Who would want to be a sheriff?
But what about...
Well, who would want a sheriff?
But what about...
I mean, seriously, hire an administrator that has no authority.
The state legislature, though, too.
What's that?
I said, what about lobbying the state legislature to get the law changed?
Well, and
it's clear.
Well, I think that's another thing we need to look at, seriously, is to like Richardson County did, they went in and got some help
when
they got drilled. And again, maybe springboarding off what Koff said, even though I understand he probably shouldn't have said it, but I think a lot of people have that feeling, you know, that... When the Attorney General for the state, who supposedly is representing us and looking out for our best interest, is confessing judgments to the maximum allowed, what the heck is going on, and how can we get a fair hearing?
Right.
But again, I mean, I don't know who to contact, like, to set up, you know, starting to help change the law on the legislative end.
That should be
certainly the legal municipalities and the county Officials Association would be the first two places that I would start.
Sheriff's.
And I understand if I got to be
a sheriff. They've got a lobbyist.
Sheriff has a lobbyist.
I mean, they need to be.
I think that's another option that.
Right.
We probably run more than one option here.
That's out of your purview, too. I mean it's like get the associations that oversee, like the sheriffs, the counties, you know, county boards. I mean, there's all these associations. Those are the ones that should be lobbying like crazy. Change our law to say what we need to say.
Guys, some of our discussion, too, on this whole deal of having an expert or somebody with more experience was partially a personal relationship with the Eighth Circuit also. You know, is that lawyer out there that's regularly in front of the Eighth Circuit that has shown a success rate? I guess that was maybe not so much the brains, even just
the relationship with the
judges. That personal relationship, yes. Yeah. I think, is that...
I don't know that weighs in their decisions. It's not supposed to.
One of the things that you have in the circuit court is you get a different panel almost every appeal. It's very rare that you get the same three judges.
We were fortunate in that we got two of the same judges on the circuit. I think, well, both. I think you had Benton on the and Smith on both.
Yeah. And certainly in this next panel, I hope they're not on it. But because of the shifting nature of the panel and the variety of cases they hear, when you have an expertise in a particular area of law, you probably aren't arguing regularly just to one court, like the Eighth Circuit. For example, insurance companies that regularly insure civil rights actions will have attorneys that they use, and it may vary depending on what circuit they're in. It may vary depending on the nature of the case. It may vary whether they have in-house or outside counsel that they use for those things. So I don't know that you can find somebody that will have a personal relationship with the Eighth Circuit judges in that sense. But there will be people who regularly appear in front of the Eighth Circuit frequently. Whether or not those are civil rights attorneys is more important to us, I think, than how often have they appeared in front of the Eighth Circuit or whether they have relationships with particular members of the circuit.
And something that you kind of said, and you did also, when you said you think you have that skill set, just talking to the attorneys I've talked to, it seems to be a consensus there too. You're respected. You have the skill there in the Eighth Circuit. They thought would be a good strong suit for you. Even going to talk to them, you also don't get rattled. You're nice and smooth. Why I can't be an attorney? I get wound up on things. But you know, during this case for you, you had health issues. What's your health look like moving forward? I mean, that's something. There's a lot of, I've asked Roger about this, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of stress and everything else going into something like this. We don't know what we have in front of us right now yet.
That's true. Well, I'll give you a brief description. As you know, Kep told everybody I looked worse than he did the fourth day of trial.
On the record.
And I ended up in the hospital, so that speaks for itself. Well, ultimately... they determined that what I had was pneumonia, but they treated several different things. They treated my heart, and they treated my kidneys, and every time they fixed something, something else went wrong. But the two things I'm doing now are watching my heart, because I do have some thickening, apparently, of the heart muscle, and I'm going to have a pulmonary evaluation in September to see how much of my lung function exists. And I won't really know till I get that, but I've been off oxygen. I was on oxygen for a while. I've been off that for about a month. Went out to Colorado, and I was about 9,500 feet, and I discovered that there's less air at 9,500 feet than there is here. But I was able to do what I wanted to do out there and had a family vacation and enjoyed it. I'm not back where I was before the trial started, and I don't know number one, whether I'll ever get back to that particular point, or number two, how long it will take me to get back there. But I'm working every day. I'm working hard on this case, spending a lot of time and hours on it. I anticipate continuing to practice law. And basically, I always said, as long as my health is good, that's what I'll do. And right now, I think it's good enough to do what I need to do. And I have enough stamina and ability to concentrate now. If it comes to a point where I don't think I have that, I hope I'll have the intelligence and willpower to say it's time for me to move on. But I don't think I've arrived at that point yet.
Do we need to contribute a tie or two and so you dress appropriately?
Well, it depends on how you define appropriate.
Well, at least you got a button-down shirt.
They're doing okay. About 10 or 11 years ago, I gave up wearing ties unless I absolutely had to.
I've been doing that more and more myself. But this board insists on me having a tie.
Yeah.
He never quite does it tight enough.
You've got to get another plaid shirt on that side of the table.
You know, I guess keep us informed, I guess. I don't know. Give us thoughts. You know, if we need to do something through any of this process, let us know. I visited a little bit about with the board. I think in the next, as we go forward, we'd like updates more often.
Okay. Let me say this. One of the things that we've really appreciated throughout this entire process, and I know I speak for Jennifer and myself, and I know I speak for Paul Douglas also, is one of the things we've always appreciated is the support of this board in Gage County and Roger and the county attorney's office here. I don't think we ever asked for anything that you didn't give us. I don't think we've ever felt at any time that anybody on the board or anybody in Gage County was trying to undermine us. We really appreciate that, and it's very important in a case like this to have that kind of support, and if you don't, things can go south pretty quick. We appreciate that, and everything I've heard today, it sounds like that's going to continue. And certainly, we want to hear any thoughts you have or anything you think we ought to be doing that you don't feel we're doing that would enhance our ability to properly represent the county. We'll certainly try to do exactly those things.
And I'd like to echo that, too, if you guys come up with something, because this is not our world. Other than Roger, law is such a different world than what the rest of us live in. If you come up with something that'll help us, that'll benefit us, that'll enhance what you're doing, let us know, and I'm guessing we're going to say, get on it, you know. Mm-hmm. That's what I would guess we would say. We want to win. I don't care how. We want to win.
Yeah. So do we.
Gary had a question again.
Well, two things. I guess we're all on the same team here, and we all understand that. We just want to make, if we need to bring in a free agent quarterback to make the team better, we're all for it, I guess.
If I could find the guy or gal that was going to turn the Eighth Circuit, I would be the first one to grab him.
Yeah. Well, I assume that would be the case.
Yeah.
The one other thing that we had discussed a little bit in closed session, I think maybe we need a little more explanation on. There was some concern going back to the trial about the comments that Melanie, that you made about Winslow being gay or whatever. Can you maybe give us a little more background on the actual conversation there? Because there is some people around us table here that had concern as far as
what
some.
I think?
Yes.
Well, and I did come out and say that he was gay, number one.
Okay.
What I said, and this was more my frustration because I thought someone was a light on the stand about the sexual assault. But if you see this man, he is clearly gay. He's very effeminate in the way that he talks and he acts. You could see it on the stand, you could see it in the interrogation that we played for the jury. He said he was bullied in high school and stopped going to school because of it. I didn't tell this to the jury, but he's on his fourth marriage.
Fifth, I think. Is it fifth?
No, it's fourth.
Oh.
And he's in the record, he had sex with, I think, at least two other men, White being one of them, and I think there was reference to another man
tall.
So it's not something that I was making up. I was just saying, and I prefaced what I said to the jury. I said, I'm not saying that he deserved this. That's what I said. But you can see he's clearly effeminate, the way he talks.
She was describing that it makes him a target in prison, which it does. I mean, and I had talked to a friend of mine who works in the prison who said he wasn't sexually assaulted. So we knew that he was not telling the truth about that. And so the purpose of...
But we couldn't get that
evidence. We couldn't get that into evidence. So the purpose of her really kind of arguing it was that it's not our fault. First of all, he was there for something else.
He was in there for the Lancaster County...
And he, of course, does... But he says that none of the sexual assaults started until he started sort of in the Gage County sentence, which is ridiculous.
Except I will remind you, in the first trial, he said he got sexually assaulted
three days after
he got there. And then he later had to admit on cross-examination that the first 3 days he spent there were as a result of Lancaster County conviction.
Right.
His testimony changed in the second trial.
And Winslow, you can tell from the interviews throughout in 1989, he's clearly a liar. So the purpose of talking about that wasn't to say, it doesn't matter whether he's gay or not. Whether he's gay or not, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And nobody deserves to be sexually assaulted in prison. But the point was, he was saying he was getting sexually assaulted because he allegedly raped an old lady.
And you know,
and also the person
hates that, right? Mm-hmm. They hate that he raped an old lady.
Right.
When the fact of the matter, that's not even true because it's the child molester something.
Yeah. The child molesters are the ones that get targeted in prison. Like both of us did the inmate litigation section, both for the Attorney General's office, okay? We know the prison system.
All three of us.
Oh, yeah, you did. And we know the prison system. And so what you do, you talk to people at the prison. My friend that works at the prison, he said, he was not targeted, you know, and he goes, he's not going to be targeted for raping an old lady. As a matter of fact, some of the groups in there think that's cool. You know, it's when you rape a child is when you really become a target in prison. So we knew he was lying. And so the purpose of it wasn't to say, if you're gay, you should be raped in prison. That's not it. The purpose was he made himself a target. He could be a target based on the fact that that's one of the elements of a target, is that if you appear effeminate, they make you their bitch. I mean, really, that's what they're going to do. And that was her point, was that it's not Gage County's fault that he got raped in prison.
In another trial, you might rethink that, as hard as that was to explain to us, even, and we're on your side.
Yeah. Well, there's one other additional matter.
We don't have sexual assaults in prison, we hang them.
In prison, there are sexually active homosexuals, and he was a sexually active homosexual in prison.
Yes.
That he wasn't being attacked or targeted. That was, in fact, the lifestyle he was pursuing, according to our... Again, we can't get that in evidence, but that's the information we have.
Never thought that probably was a connection with Smith, the guy that died down in...
Bruce Allen Smith?
Yeah.
He was definitely an epiphiliac.
Well, but he had HIV.
But
they said that there was no connection between the six.
And Smith.
And
there might not have been, because I think...
Well, I didn't say there wasn't a connection. Yeah. I don't think they ever found
a connection.
No, they didn't.
Didn't make any connection.
And we probably would avoid that next time.
Yes. One other
option. That was HIV, though, and you could tie the two.
That was why I was at, just saying, explain a little deeper, because the way you discussed it the other day, it was like, she just called this guy out as being gay, and he deserved it, and that doesn't sound very good.
I didn't say it like that, but, you know, Jeff Patterson came back on his rebuttal and said, I don't think I heard her say, but I'm implying that I did say he deserved it. But if you read the record, that's not what I said.
Nobody deserves to be raped in prison. Nobody.
Yeah. Well, the news media isn't on our side. We've got to accept they're going to twist everything they can find.
Right.
One other thing, and I just, so we got all our options of recovering it. The bankruptcy option.
Yep.
We talked about if Krieger or that group. Do we know of anybody?
Bob Krieger.
And again, I just think the board, I mean, we all talk about it, don't like it, and it's bad taste, but I think we as a board needs to know
Pool? What happens if all of the crap goes to that goes what south happened? On us? What's that mean?
Let me tell you
as far as protection.
Three things. Melanie's firm has bankruptcy expertise, as I understand it.
Right, John Hahn.
Okay,
chapter
John.
Nine.
Okay.
He does not do Chapter 9. But Bob Krieger does do Chapter 9.
Bob Krieger does what he does, I guess. Woods Aiken is another firm in Lincoln that have had contacted me and said that they would have some interest if there was a bankruptcy proceeding. Joe Badami, I'm not sure how active Joe is anymore, but Joe is a trustee in bankruptcy for years and years and years, and they have some people that do bankruptcy. Again, Chapter 9 is a very unusual proceeding in bankruptcy, and there's nobody that you're going to find who specializes in Chapter 9 bankruptcies.
I think John was saying that there may be some Nebraska attorneys who've done it for the SIDs that have gone bankrupt. There may be someone out there.
Well, and again, I just, you know, somebody that you could ask, okay, just generally, what's this going to mean for the county? I mean, are we going to lose our bond rating? Is the schools going to be in trouble? The hospital? I mean, they all have bonds.
The whole purpose is maybe to see if there's some way you can work out a payment plan.
Well,
and that's kind of
my thought is, and again, you guys haven't heard anything back from the other side at this point. But let's not kid. I mean, I would assume at some point it's kind of like, are we playing poker, you know, blind bluff or whatever? They got to be talking too, because they're not going to collect $30 freaking million from this county.
Right. Not at once.
What?
Not at once.
Well, you know, and again, if they think they're going to get it and, you know, live to spend it, I think they're, you know, because. But at any rate, I can't tell this board or advise them, but I think it would be helpful when they're doing, you know, like right now, they're going through a budget, wondering what the hell can we buy a car for the sheriff?
Yeah.
Or we're going to be screwed.
I think that Chapter 9, you need to have enough money to be operational. They're not ever going to bankrupt the county.
Right. They can't cut your essential services. The bankruptcy judge, and I forget the technical term they use for it, but in effect can cut the award. And there has to be good faith negotiations.
Cram it down.
Good faith negotiations with respect to trying to settle on a payment plan of some kind before anybody can do a collection. So I think the process for them to come try to get their hand in your pocket is an extended one. And certainly, if you want, we can explore in greater detail with the three people we talked about.
We've talked a little bit about we don't want to wait until the Eighth Circuit Court decision and then, hey, let's visit with the bankruptcy attorney.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Sometime in this process, in the next so many months, we would sure like to.
You want us to make arrangements to bring down some people?
Bring down somebody and have.
Bring down John.
So that what we want to be is we want to be more familiar. We're not saying we'll go that way. We have no idea yet.
Each of us will try to make arrangements to bring somebody down the next time we come.
Well, we would like.
Cobalt does bankruptcy.
Yeah, Cobalt. But the thing is.
But he does.
That's what I'm saying. I can ask.
And it's more of a information discussion because none of us are familiar with it at all, and just that as we plan the next year or two, that may be a possibility. Okay, don't know if it will or not. We don't know what this is going to end up at.
Why don't we each talk to the people we've discussed and see if they'll come down and make a presentation to you. You can get some judgment on what you want to do.
I think it would be helpful. Roger's good perspective is that, you know, we arm wrestle over $50,000 over damn gravel, a $25,000 police car. And we're on the hook for $28 million. It's just not even in our wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And so we're just...
I haven't talked to anybody that thinks it's a reasonable judgment. I mean, there may be somebody out there that does besides
Bill's
the attorneys.
Bill came up and told me that he said sometimes you get one of these stinky things. You just got to take them in the other room and settle on them out and write them a check. I'm going to say, Bill, what's my limit with you?
Yeah.
Did you meet with somebody for some bankruptcy attorney a couple times, Pat, or no?
We talked to John in my office.
And we talked to John Hahn. I talked to a guy in Woods Acre, and I didn't talk to the actual bankruptcy attorney there, but another fellow I know. That we're talking about other things. He said, is the county going to go into bankruptcy? And then we went on from there.
But you didn't get any how it would work other than we'd be able to operate them.
Yes.
I think the thing is, first you have to try and work out a settlement with them, some kind of payment plan. If you can't make that settlement, that's when you go into Chapter 9 and the bankruptcy court forces you to. I don't think you can discharge that judgment. You maybe have the ability to cram it down to make it less, but I don't know anything about how that works. But you have to first try to work out a deal.
And one of the things that you look at is what is the county's governmental obligation? What resources do they have to raise money? What's a realistic amount of money they can raise? Over what period of time would it be required to raise those? All of those things would go into those kinds of negotiations. So, yeah, we did some exploration, but I would still say it was preliminary and not definitive.
I always like to think ahead, but there isn't any way in my heart, my mind, or anywhere else that I can see us losing this. Okay? Did you hear me?
Yes.
Very clearly? Hey, are you guys thinking?
You don't see us giving up.
No, we're not giving up.
All right, okay.
No, we like live this case. I mean, it is on my mind at least once a day because I'm just so disappointed in the way this happened because it just isn't right.
I think everybody in this room is.
It just isn't right.
Thank you guys for coming down. But one other thing, and I visited with the board this, I don't think we have as a board kept up enough on maybe what's all involved with this all the time. If maybe once a month we could have, not all three of you, one of you come down and update us.
Sure.
You know, Skip, we meet every 2 weeks. So like the 14th of September, one of you just plan on coming down, we'll go into closed session again. I think we need to be more familiar or...
Sure.
Yep.
Sure.
Instead of sitting back...
Hopefully after you get through this initial period of hearings and appeals filed and that stuff... If there isn't anything, I mean, you can probably email.
Right, email Roger and
I'll get it to the board.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like.
And if it doesn't work,
really study.
You come down, email Roger, or report, and let us know because we.
Do you have a calendar of your board meeting schedules? I see it on the line.
Every Tuesday.
Is it online?
We're not next Wednesday. We're the Wednesday after. We're every other Wednesday.
Okay. Yeah, so, we can certainly do that.
Yeah. And like I said, one of you is fine. Just visit a little bit amongst yourself and come down and update us, and maybe we'll have thoughts or questions, too, for you. But
okay.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you much.
You bet.
Maybe we'll see you
Wednesday. Yep. Take care.
Oh, you want to call Gus, too, then, whenever here? He was going to come back over with Art.
I'll text him.
You'll text him. Gary will text him. Good deal.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Yeah. Yep. Have a good day. Pat, take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Do you need me for the budget?
Not for the budget.
I mean, no, I'm not asking for a new car, but...
Not if you want to defend your budget, you know, somehow.
I told Matt, anybody got questions, just call me.
I know you're planning on hiring somebody new for Rick.
Little,
you know,
this
people off.
I've had two people.
You know, I think... Yeah, and then she shook her head no one until we got an answer. That's why I said we're at the goddamn...
With my right hand, man.
I mean, he was like a boss with him from hell.
I'm not going to get that. I mean, not for the money, and not being critical. I'm just saying. A lot of them, probably going to see who I get. And if they're going to be...
Well, it could have got worse. They could have put a few
certain
judgment against us.
But it's like, kind of, and we talked about it. She's okay with, you know, if I find somebody that's like Rick or Mark Moyer, I had. She has no problem. She says, I'll stay where I'm at. And you can hire them.
Well, but this isn't the judgment as far as if this is for
God Almighty. And I don't know. I finally asked one guy that was
with the AG, the Attorney General's office, and I knew he was looking. I says, would you be interested in
coming to the choir?
You got the expertise. Says, well, I'll get back to you. And I asked his supervisor, I said, is he worried about that case? And he says, I think he is a little bit, because he says he would be moving his family, buying a home, and bringing him down here. And he doesn't know if you're going to end up with maybe just you and another attorney for the next few years. And I never thought about that. So,
Myron, should we jump to that power lease thing?
We got to 11:38 on the clock. I'll entertain a motion to come out of closed session.
So moved.
Second. Motion by Lytle, second by Durgan. Vote 7-0 in favor. You want to? We can.
Well, if Gus isn't here, if he's let's
okay,
let's
yeah,
move
let's,
on.
The, communication. The communication tower lease with the Charter always had, and now First Wireless. I did visit. If I can find my thing here, I did call Doug Ostergaard. I got to find my paper here. I apologize. I did visit with Doug Ostergaard yesterday about that, and about the fact that you know, the city. They specifically, I told them, I said, they specifically told us they did not need that anymore, and that's why we took over the lease. He said he's not so sure that they still aren't paying the lease.
No.
No?
So because they tried to sell them once, and they told them no,
well,
that they didn't pay it.
Part of what Doug told me was his company needs to do more research. They're going to go down and check out all the equipment. What we're paying, he says, isn't leased so we can lease on the equipment there. The equipment's ours. We're paying lease on using the antenna that's up there, he said. So he says, and then we're allowed to store all of our equipment there with it that we need. He says, no, the county right now, his understanding, and he said this could change because he hasn't been down there to investigate it all. He said the county right now does not have anything on there, as far as he knows, that they have to have. He says, no, it's Wymore. He says, yes, the city of Beatrice. They need, and he had different words, and I can't remember what it was. They need that for theirs, he said. The city of Beatrice does need that yet. Yeah. So he hopes to, in the next couple of weeks or so, or so long a time, they're going to go down and investigate that more. They have to research the contract more and all of that, he says. And then they will get back to us. And I says, you will come to a meeting. He says, I will be. When we have this and we have a firm handle on what's all there, what's all involved, everything, he said, I will be at one of your board meetings.
Well, that's one reason I read through all those communication contracts and dollars and cents and everything. I don't know why it's our responsibility to keep the damn tower.
We're not keeping the tower. We're keeping the antenna on the tower. That's what we're paying the lease for. But if you recall, when we took this over, our sheriff's department, we had gone into the statewide system, and that was not performing the way it was. They needed that antenna and some of the equipment there as what you call a very, very, very reliable backup. We had to have that, you know. When that was when I'm assuming this lease is about a year old. I don't know. I looked at it. I can't remember. 2 years. Well, whenever we switched over, we did as a county sheriff, we had to have that yet, okay?
All right.
Because I remember Klaus, I think it was Klaus was actually here and says, we cannot drop that. We would lose too much coverage because the statewide system is not working.
I was going to say, actually, it was the last time we discussed it was when they were wanting them extra $10,000 satellite boosters because they weren't getting the reception they needed inside the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so we were keeping the voter system
active. Is that system working now, Myron?
At least, I guess, as far as everybody, as my understanding and what they've told us is that statewide system is operating like it's supposed to be. Finally, after twice the cost in 2 years, Ryan, and you know,
I will abstain from this conversation.
I know.
I am here.
Why doesn't?
Well, but back to the tower.
What about the statewide system? Why are we on that?
I'm just kidding.
That tower, then, like I said, that's why I called Doug. I had Don give me his number, and I called Doug, and I says, well, we would really appreciate an update. Because I said, you know, we had Tim here, we had Carla here, and there was some disagreement and all this. And he says, well, he says, to tell you the truth, he says, I'm not sure other than then I have a good idea. But he says, we need to research everything. We need to research, our company needs to research exactly who has what contract and where. And that's when he made the comment. He says, I don't think Beatrice knows it, but somewhere in their billing system, he says, they're getting billed for it. Now, that was his comment. I can't tell you or not, but the thing I don't agree with is, or I guess I'm disappointed in, the city of Beatrice said, we absolutely do not need that. We're getting rid of that lease out there. We're not paying it no more. Yeah, right.
Wasn't that when they had... I don't know, that was before him.
No, see, they were, if you remember through part of this process, and Doug said too, and even Carla, their goal was to move everything off of that tower down there.
So
that has not been done. They're finding out that they're, with that lightning thing, there's a lot more things yet that, you know, weren't working, and they're working on all of that. Doug is not so sure that the equipment out here will actually function properly for the city on their one down there. So those are good questions to ask them, guys.
Well, if we don't need it, I'd say we notice that we're not going to use it anymore.
He said the city of Wymore definitely needs it. He said that communication with the city of Wymore back and forth would be really minimal.
That has nothing to do with the county still.
That has nothing to do with the county. But and this is just Doug talking yesterday. He says I need to go down there and need to look at everything.
$1?
We need to... know exactly what's there and what's being used and all of that.
We can't just give our notice that we're going to terminate our agreement
In the contract, I did read that. We have 90 days termination.
Should we go ahead and give notice then? And
Let's wait till we know what Doug says. Okay.
You don't want to give notice and then tell them later we can wait?
You want to give notice now?
People will move if you give notice.
We're not giving notice to the city, though. We're giving notice to Charter or First Wireless.
The contract's not with the city. Mm.
That's right. That's who you're giving the 90-day notice to.
I give notice, and we have 90 days. By then, I don't know if we're wrong.
Let's put it on next.
They said they're not using it. That's why we're paying.
Our notice would go.
Oh, my gosh, that was a neater news.
That's right. That's who we're giving notice to. No, we wouldn't be giving the city notice. No, we'd be giving notice. The 90-day notice is to...
Terry, you'll want to hear this. I got whole pages of cuts here.
Oh, go for it. Let's put it on next agenda then. Vote on however you want to do it.
Approve or disapprove.
Right.
Giving notice.
Giving 90-day termination notice to... whoever you want, I don't know, whoever you put it down there, First Wireless
now.
First Wireless to terminate communication tower lease.
Because if the city doesn't need it, then we don't need it. Why is anybody paying for anything? And if the city needs it, then they should just be paying for it.
And if they're already paying for it and they don't realize it.
It's redundant billing. So.
Yeah.
And then we should have some repayment. I'm sure it's a mistake if they're billing us both. It's not fraud, so they want to return money.
Doug said our company does not have a good handle on that yet. On the he knows that there's definitely seen the contract with us, but he says they do not have a firm understanding of everything that's going on there with that tower yet.
So hopefully the city and Doug have an understanding as to what they need there. Before there.
Doug knows what they need.
Yeah.
All right. We're done with that. I got all kinds of questions.
Kind of like we knew what we needed for state radio system.
How did we get into that state radio?
We got into that because of narrow banding from the federal government. That's actually what started the whole thing.
Oh, I know.
What was the replacement?
Yeah. And we were not having what you call adequate coverage. We had problems.
I know.
And
he's just poking.
I know. I'm poking the bear. If we're going to pull that 35 out of that vehicle expense on page 24 for the EMS guy, while the sheriff's gone, I've got a couple other ones that I just have. Some of them are more question than anything else.
But on the EMS, I mean, Gary, what is the status of the vehicle?
Which one?
The EMS vehicle.
The three-quarter ton Chevy Suburban. It runs well. There was a couple repairs on it.
Yeah, there was something else that, but it doesn't put 2,000 miles a year on it.
I bet he is now. He's been seen out and about in quite a bit.
He's got another vehicle, though, that he takes for the running around. He was wanting to replace the bigger vehicle to hold all the equipment, if I understood
that
right.
That Suburban is the one he wanted to replace.
On page 27, this is very minor. Fleet operating, we spend about $2,800. There's $8,300 budgeted. I didn't know if we want to drop that to five or just leave it where it is. That's pretty minimal. It's just a little cushion in there.
It's slightly less than last year what was budgeted. I think that's probably something we're ignoring. But that
may be something where the money is there. We definitely have an issue where we could use it.
We do have an issue where we could use it.
I'm going to leave that one alone then. Page 28. I was looking at total operating expense, and I don't know exactly. This is relief medical personal services.
Don and I looked at that too, and up to $54,000. What was that?
What's that mean?
Oh, relief.
I see it. We spent 17, 10.
I'm going to have to. We're in a case. I'm working with Callan right now. I've got some claims coming in for general assistance from Lancaster requesting funding, and it's about $34,000 right now. So we're
okay. So that's something. You know what it is. It's there for a reason. I just saw it.
I just trying. You know, they send me notice every time to say remove this person from our county. Blah 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 blah. And then they send me bill saying that you owe for this person because their residency is still established as Gage County. I replied back to her and I said, well, you need to send me proof. I'm not going to pay a bill without knowing and checking into really are they a resident of my county or they aren't. She says, well, you didn't get all that? And I said, no. So there's that. Then I'm working with Callan on EPC. That's another fund where Brian is after us for a bunch more money again. Remember when I talked about Brian? Well, then they just dropped the ball after I responded to them. That was all the conversation I had. Well, now they've got a collection agency contacting Callan saying that we need to pay this. Don't know where we're at, but that's the crux of these two things. So
I was going through more looking at changes, you know, more than anything. So that one, that was one that I just had marked as Y. So that makes sense. This is general everything. Page 37. Visitor promotion, operating expense.
That's an in and out.
We don't have no control over
why
that.
Why is it doubled?
Because they have been getting more tourism tax, lodging tax in.
That's lodging, okay.
It's because, Eric, you haven't had anybody applying for any of those funds.
No. He's not talking about that one. He's talking about visitor promotion. So half of the lodging tax goes there. And so it's an in and out process. So if they don't budget high enough, then we can't pay it out to them if they get it. If they don't get it, they don't get this much money.
Right, but they're budgeting. See, because what he's saying is it's doubled.
Well,
it was about $70,000.
Now it's $130,000.
Now it's $130,000.
Just in 1 year.
The reason that is because they got more funds because nobody has been applying for the funds. So there's more funds sitting there.
The funds are in this one. The funds are in the visitor improvement.
They have to have the budgeted amount to spend the funds.
No, that's in two different budgets. This is just to pay for the chamber person, the tourism person, the bills and stuff. This one here is actually for the grants.
Then why did it double?
Because they think they're going to get more tourism dollars or lodging tax dollars.
But that don't mean their expenses for their offices going up.
They get it. That's their money. They get half of that, and we put half in the improvement fund, regardless of what.
Why is that going on our? Isn't that odd to go in our general fund then for that?
Yeah, it's an in and out. Lori gets it in, the state deposits it in, and then she has to turn around and issue a claim to us to pay it out to them. We don't have a choice.
As long as you understand it, I guess. I just had a why question on my page.
Yeah, and I did talk to Abby, which Abby's no longer there. Yeah. And they all, they're understanding, you know, if that much money doesn't come in, we won't. Because at the end of last year, they had more money there than what they had budgeted. We could not pay that out till this year.
That's my next question. Then is the next page on 38 visitor improvements.
So, okay, were there Okay, the first page,
mm-hmm.
the promotion.
The promotion.
$130,000.
Mm-hmm.
So they're spending $70,000 on the person in the position.
Whatever they spend it on, whether it's advertising,
okay.
whatever.
So
all of this goes
Laura's
for that.
Going to spend another $60,000 on advertising.
That's their money.
So how
well, then the next page, 38.
She'll come and ask us for $60,000
more. Budgeted expense, we spend $35,021. Budget, $150,000.
I budget what's
$35,000
in that fund.
And
this is for your grants. Yes.
This is what those grants are for. That you know, like the ballparks and those. That's how big that fund's
that
gotten.
Fund's about almost $200 now.
Yeah, and we can't touch. That's not.
That's another thing.
That's not theirs. That's not the chambers.
They're the ones.
They help manage it.
Yeah. They're the ones that right. people come. But they've been wanting to. I think they've been wanting to sit on that because they have some ideas.
No,
there's
no.
been some other.
No,
ones
that it all comes to us for approval yet. Okay, like this star, not the star, the sun,
solar eclipse. Yep.
See, some of that they came to us, and some of that's getting approved out of there for expenses for advertising and stuff. Some of that's coming out of there because
we
still approve that.
We may not have paid everything out of this fund yet. If people get done with their project, then they have to turn in the bills to us. Then it comes through as a claim. But we do not pay any money out until the project's done and the bills are submitted to us.
Yeah.
Those dollars are all spent. Okay, they have their advisory committee.
Yep.
They come in and they say, okay, this is the project we have. And they got to go through the process of saying, you know, it fits your credentials or whatever, and then mm-hmm. that they approve it, and then that comes in front of us, and then we approve it,
yep.
and then once it's done, then
we approve giving them the check.
I remember them coming and asked, so they ask for it, we approve it, and then when it's done, we approve it. So we approve it twice to pay out.
You do that a claim process on the yep. second time, yes. Yep.
Okay, page 43, Homeland Security Personnel Services.
That's the money that is sitting in that fund. I did not budget anymore, and neither did Tim say anything. So that's the dollars that are still
sitting
in there.
That's the stuff we more or less found last year that we didn't know that we.
No, I budgeted the amount that's in there each year right now. Mark used to actively have money coming in. I think that's kind of dried up now. There's no more dollars mm-hmm. for Homeland Security. This money is still there. What that can be used on, I don't know, because I don't know the criteria for Homeland Security.
I wonder if that's anything that can be used for the Sheriff's Department for equipment or something.
I don't know. Tim has been a little skittish on some of the stuff that's been paid before by these audits. So some things may have changed. So you might have to visit with him on that.
Well, so I didn't know if that's something that could be used there.
I wonder if the state.
Well, I know they come down. When we had the one that I'm driving, they'd come down yearly and do an audit. Then after so many years, then it just turned over accounting, and I went ahead and graphic it out. So yeah. I don't know if they still like that or not, but that could be some of it.
Did you get down to $1,111,000?
No, we've been working on it. Because that's almost, I think that was just close to last year's budget, if I remember correctly.
The $1,111,000?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was real close. I said that's not realistic.
I know. Well, here's the thing. I went back to lines that have the most money, like the vehicle repair, fuel, law enforcement supplies, overtime vehicles. You know, and you get to the point where you cut so much, you come back. And I always hate doing that, but we just all realize that the budget's your best guess. You know, vehicles, we can put aside and fight that battle next year because we're going to do it. We just all know that's going to happen. I still have to do a little in there for transition costs until we bought a while back. Now you can cut fuel, you can cut supplies, overtime, vehicle repair, but then you know what kind of year you're going to have. And you're not talking 20, 30, 40, 50,000. We're talking.
Let's remember, though, the biggest thing, this is something we had a big discussion with at the city. This isn't a cut. This is a decrease in increase. A cut would put us down below. We'd be going
correct
down. We're right. increasing. We're not cutting anything.
Right.
We're still increasing.
But it depends. Every year, your expenses peak and valley. You don't know what you're going to have. Now, last year, we didn't have any vehicles, but these good deal come up on those two that were new, that were older. This year,
it won't. Call.
Yeah. This year, might not be that at all if we get cars. Could be a lousy year for cars. Yeah. Investigations. I don't know if you're here from a closed session I had. I already started doing that stuff a couple weeks ago. And
that's something we did talk about. We don't want to interfere with.
You know, I just honestly, when I do these, there's not a lot of fat. And like I said, I think we turned out 68,000. I think was back last budget. And that's because the board put a substantial amount of money there because there are things I'm required now, we didn't used to in the years past, mandatory training. So he tried to put a little extra in there to get people off the training. Well, if the training's not scheduled in that particular fiscal period, I don't use that money, and so some of that come back along with me. The fuel wasn't as bad as we thought or whatever, but I don't know. I guess you decide on a bottom number, and I'll just get next to Don and get some more time penciled out, and I'll just have to see where we can put it.
1.226?
Yeah. Well, just plan on it, and I'll tweak the numbers when we get back to Don right away. And
yep.
Just do what I can do.
1,000,026.
605,41.
226, Matt, you said?
Yep. 1,226,605,41.
Okay.
Or as I like to remember it, three times the attorney's budget. Just glad to throw that in there. It's a thankless job, Gus. I hope you don't think I'm really.
Well, we just had. I know it, and everybody wants. We had people bring like just tons of donuts over today. I think with all the things going on across country, people are getting more aware of.
I normally would never do it. I was just in Houston with getting my brother, moving him back, and I actually parked next to one of the sheriff's deputies there, and I just knocked on his window and gave him a thumbs up. I mean, it is something where you guys. Nobody wants you until we need you.
Exactly right.
And, yeah. Yeah. Just trying to keep everybody on. You're not going to be an even plane with everyone, but
no.
Trying to keep everyone moving forward at the same.
I understand.
Approximate, and trying to curtail knickknacks and bobbleheads with digital monitors and stuff and everything else in the cars.
Well, I tell you what's driven a lot has been one of the workload over the years, the lawsuits and liability. And mandatory requirements we have to do. That's just driven my budget like crazy anymore.
There's a change in demographic you're working with, too.
Absolutely, there is.
Better. So even though I'm beating you up and I joke with you on it, Sam, I mean, we really are trying to look at
a big picture.
In a way, it's almost a mandate that's been put on law enforcement because, you know, the in-car cameras, the in-car computers and all that stuff, we can sit here and say, you know, knickknacks, and it's not stuff that we really, really need. But quite honestly, it is something that we need because if you don't have it,
it doesn't happen.
You can't prove.
That's right.
I mean, it's just.
And that's what the courts see. They want to see it on a video. If it's not there, then it's probably going to go out the door.
Yeah, and then what does that do? That creates more lawsuits for us, and we won't be able to defend ourselves because you don't have the equipment.
And that was $120,000-$130,000 for those.
Yeah.
Just because. Just dictating anymore. So
yeah.
it's just a vicious circle. It is. So.
Just for conversation, remind the board or explain the one thing that I see, Gus, that does throw a red flag is that from 14 till now, if you look at our deputies' salaries, they've increased 30% in 3 years. What is that? Have we added that many more deputies, or what?
No, you would. Well,
what's the reason for that?
You would have. Well, see, the last 3 years it's a 4-year contract, so that would be built into the 4-year contract step plans.
Right. But that
the
would
only
be like
the only deputies we would have added would have been one to the courthouse, because we didn't keep in a separate line. You wouldn't keep them just all into this budget. So Davidson's probably salaries in there.
Oh, okay.
Davidson's would have been.
But that's only one because nobody else got hired full time.
Yeah, no, that would be.
Yeah.
That's probably.
That's the only one I know of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, Eric. I know you just want to say something.
Well, I was just looking at and I don't know if this is one you don't want to talk about now, but I saw equipment rental for last year. We're over double budgeted for
equipment rental.
Yes, I'm on page 15. Are you on the? Do you have the same sheets as I do?
Oh, I'm on the second one.
Top right corner. Do you have page number
15? Okay, equipment
look
rental.
The bottom line. I'm just looking at not per item, but the bottom line there. 15-16 versus estimate for next year for rental. 16.
I'm not picking that up here. Where are you at?
Equipment rental 4-02.
Oh, you're on a different page than I have.
Yeah, but you were the ones that wanted this done, right?
Yes.
4-02?
Yes, for four, this is 15-16 equipment rental costs, and this is budgeted. We're
you gotta go
over double for that.
The only other thing we got, you can go anytime here. I want tomorrow night to have a zoning meeting.
Well, I guess I should say we're about $100,000
up. Public hearing on a chicken permit.
Oh, you brought it back?
Oh, you brought it back. Yeah, you brought it back. And the zoning board has theirs scheduled tomorrow night.
I know there'd be some.
Okay,
you have lines 3-8.
That's the only thing we're going to visit about. And I think, too, yeah, let's have it at a night.
Equipment rental, I've got $180,000.
My goal is that night we have our public
hearing. It says Sheriff's Personal Services.
Okay, what do you
operating expenses? I'm under Sheriff's operating expenses, supplies, and materials.
Oh, you're up under 2-3030.
Go down just a little bit further.
What page are you on there, Denny?
15.
Okay, 3-0211. Okay, go down just a little bit more. Equipment rental.
Thursday, 25th.
Under 6. See this 84,000?
No. Right here.
That was last year's expense. This is budgeted. We're
Don,
here's where it's at on Denny's page. Right here's where it is on my page.
Are you looking at
especially talking finances, that'd be good.
This is the one you gave us the other day when I was
on the 25th.
Denny's looking at.
Your yellow folder. If you, it's right here on yours, though.
These are just all of these lines.
Yes, that's where I was wondering why are we up $100,000 on this one?
Well, because this is actually.
Well, this is total. All this line? I thought this was total
no,
of just
this,
the.
But this is what he of the year before. This is what he spent in this area.
So where did we gain $100,000 at?
7th or 8th of September. You want the same.
And then I moved that. Then there's 33,000 here. 20. So 12, that's 13, but this 15, is what he spent. 14, it. But if you look 13. Over here, is what he budgeted.
That week, Don.
Well, it's not that much different.
Probably the
10.
We could even go the week. I don't care what week.
So if we look across here, 57. Budgeted.
Okay, what time?
We've been spending 14, 20. Supplies, law enforcement supplies.
That week, the first week of September.
From yeah. Last year,
they are having that one meeting.
Okay.
40,000 higher.
Yeah, that I really like.
Majority of it there.
DOT training.
Investigative expenses are up 30,000.
The law enforcement supplies, but which I'm buying.
Well, let's have it Tuesday and 13th. What the heck? I don't care. 10, 20,000. It works for everybody else.
I thought this was. See, on my sheet here it says equipment rental. That's not.
That'd be a good
yeah,
job.
That.
Chicken
like, well, that's a lot of rental.
Tuesday the 13th.
Oh, what time?
Supplies and materials. I see.
I do my biggest one.
North State Survey is 90.
But that's up $100,000.
Yep. Again, if anyone had to get to it.
Okay. Thanks for coming, man.
Well, that's the bad thing.
No.
We get a snapshot.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
You get a lot of your questions. Not all
were
answered.
Most of those were. They were questions, you know, why is
right,
this
why?
Like this? Why is that like
and that's
that?
Why we have this. And that's why we have the discussion. So.
Gus thinks he can get down to $1,111,000, though.
No, he's lying. He should go to jail for that, probably.
Yeah.
But
yeah, he can go to jail.
I said, I can try. It just
listen
depends.
To John. He doesn't back me up. He goes, yeah, he can go to jail. I heard that.
Actually, he said give him a number and he'll make it work.
That is
that's what
he what said.
You try to do.
I heard that, too.
But
I heard
then I come back and see
thing.
You. That's the problem.
You also have to make sure that there's enough to cover the wages. And other than that, you know, the wages.
Yeah, because that's,
well,
that's
be
on
that's
contract.
That's already being paid. I mean, we have to pay that.
Yeah.
There I tried going down and taking so much off each line. Well, that didn't work well because some lines I never could do it, and the other ones I couldn't do it at all.
Yes, and it may just be we just pick a line, take it out, and then you just know you move around because it's not a line item budget. It's just
I bought a number.
When the guys actually get a gross aggregate, yeah.
When the guys go out to the academy, does it need to be a marked car and everything else, or can it just be a Geo Metro that we sit
no.
back?
Well, no, I got It depends. Now, things change out there so much. Sometimes, years back, they wanted your patrol car, the one you use when you do your testing, so you go to court. Now, that might have changed. You have old ones out there. Then they can take another vehicle. The problem I had, I'm down to one, and that's your old transport van that we use now.
We just got rid of some nice ones at the highway department.
Well, that or we could always use a rental.
Well,
a rental vehicle if on something like that, you're right, yep. Less expense than.
Well, but I don't know if you have your own versus you rent it, because we're talking. I think we're 16 weeks now. They're talking about going more. So I don't know how the rental would it add up to our period of time. That's the problem. It adds up so much. That's why I'm looking at the K-9 program. It's about as long out there as it is for the officer. So I'm looking to go someplace else. It's lesser time, but more one-on-one training, and save a ton of money that way on backfill for wages. But that just, your training kills you when you hire somebody.
Nothing you can do about it.
No.
The killer is on these vehicles when they go out there, or if they're sitting at a person's house for an off shift. That's like me sending a piece of equipment home with somebody and say, take this home. Don't use it. Leave it sit there. I mean, it's a huge asset that we don't use.
When the previous sheriff was in, we started transitioning over to everybody having their own car. We did it through new and used. The idea was they're spaced around the county, a lot of them. Deterrent for crime. People see you, didn't know if you're working or not, and they're just out in the communities. Well, over the years, times, they can't find places or can't afford it, so they end up back in town. Well, then when we tried to double up, as a while back, that went south on us. Plus, in our work, they respond quickly. They can go from their home. They have a lot of training they have to go to now. So I know some agencies will not pay for their training or pay for their driving out to and from work. They don't pay that wage. But I don't know. It's just you look at doing different things, and then you find out you can't necessarily because it's going to be an issue for you.
The worst is that union. I mean, that's the detriment.
The problem is I've been at this so long. I know it was when I did it, and what it is now, it's far better. But for people just getting in it now, it's never good enough. That's a problem.
But you saw it at the other side.
I absolutely did. We got by with tablets and number 2 lead pencils. I was fine and no stress. Now I have all this money and all this stuff we got to do to train people. And I'll tell you, you're almost at the point where you have to have an IT person because we cannot keep up with it. It's just terrible. I know that's the next thing that Lang's talking about down there, is wanting to maybe do something with that and share some costs for everybody, because it's the same way for him down there.
The bad thing is, though, it keeps getting more and more and more technological stuff. Yeah. We're going to get to a point where we can't even operate the stuff. It's cool because there's stuff out there, and there seems to be always public money for public safety. Well, you're a necessity. Is all the crap? I don't think it is. I mean, I think we're at the pinnacle of the garbage we buy now. Now it's time to start weaning off some of that. And I wouldn't even mind seeing the money go to the people instead of the technology in the car. How much better off would you be if you could afford to hire more deputies instead of put a $100,000 computer in their car?
Well, it's a trade-off.
They're not putting a $100,000 computer in their car, but...
No, well, $150,000
I guess. Yeah. The problem is, some of the new technology, these millennial people now, it's a recruiting tool. If you don't have a lot of the stuff nowadays,
They don't want to work anyway, guys.
Well, there are different work ethic, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Certainly is.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you, guys.
You bet.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Thanks, sir.
We'll have a public hearing next meeting.
Where do we stand on this? Are we going to maintain the 2.88%?
I think that's, that's kind of what...
I think that's probably where we're going
to... I don't have to change that, and I'm just going to move whatever he changes, and I will put that into probably the outside attorney fees line as well.
That one there, because we had 60,000.
And I'll agree with the 1.226, 605.41 instead of what I wanted as 1.191559.
So the other thing I need to know now is that a consensus that we are moving the vehicle out of
emergency management as well?
I think so, just because the previous discussion.
Yep. Yes.
Well, I need it pretty much definite if I'm going to move forward with
that. We want to move that out of there too.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And if sometime during the year if that one fails, then we go in some other fund to get the money for that. But right now, I think we all agree that that's not going to be in there.
Okay.
And we all agree, I think, that 5% is more than ample. Here and
well, I think as we present that to the public, I think the public will realize too that we can present each of the increases to those budget, and the sheriff's department budget will have a 5% increase now.
Yeah, I just don't want to confuse an increase with a cut. That's not a cut. No. It's a 5%.
It's a 5% increase. Yes.
Yep. It's a 6 or 7% cut over. No, it's a 9% cut of asked for, but it's still an increase. It's an increase.
So public hearing will be on the 31st for our budget.
Okay, and I tentatively have it had it down that way for 9:45. So
9:45 be good.
Yeah, that's the way I'll probably advertise it then. Something changes here.
Yep.
All right.
Okay, the only other thing I have is tomorrow night the Zoning Board has their public hearing on another chicken permit. Roy filed another chicken permit. Just talking to John and Matt a little bit, Bonnie Buzzum did call me last night, and that group or that bunch of people opposed to this, they had some conversation. Would really appreciate an evening meeting again for our public hearing. Because I'd like to be able to tomorrow night say this is our date or whatever. You guys see if this works for you on Tuesday the 13th of September. And this is just talking to John and Matt, so if we need to change it, we can. But Tuesday the 13th of September at 6:30 at night.
That's a really good day.
I know it. They're going to have, Lisa tomorrow is going to, tomorrow night, she's going to limit them to 3 minutes of conversation, okay? That's what she's planning on doing in a way. I think, too, we'll limit them to at least 3 minutes. It won't be that long. Well, it's still going to be long. Like I said, my intentions are, and I've been telling everybody that we will vote that night.
Here's my personal opinion. And I am a big supporter of evening meetings. We have already gone out of our way one time to do a special evening meeting when we're unwilling to do evening meetings for regular meetings. If we're going to do this, we should consider doing regular evening meetings.
I wouldn't be opposed to that either, Will. I mean,
regular evening meetings, or you want to move this one to our daytime?
Either we could move it to the day, but I wouldn't be opposed to evening meetings either. I mean,
but I think I remain opposed to evening meetings, because you look at our attorneys, you're going to bring them down here at night. You look at the highway department when Manelli comes down here, you're bringing them outside of their business hours.
Dawn said she misses the courthouse when she leaves in the evening.
She doesn't leave. She doesn't leave in the
evening. I've seen her leave before 9 o'clock several times.
No, I agree with you, John. The amount of time we'd have to have our other employees that'll have to come in here.
I think there is
that
time for an evening meeting.
That's the struggle that I have. I'd have to have staff
justified in this case.
That's
have any of that, and then you'd have to have the custodian. They'd have to go through and monitor the doorways and stuff.
Here's the reason that I say this, and I disagree. Because these people you're making special arrangements for because they can't be here in the morning.
Yeah.
All these other things, there are people that can't have the same problem. They can't be here for our meetings. So this small portion of our constituent base we're making arrangements for, and we're ignoring the other 98%. I'm sorry, I disagree. If we're going to do an evening meeting, we should always do evening meetings, or we should at least have an allowance for at least half of the evening meetings.
I wouldn't have no problem going to evening meetings either.
If there is something where people...
I know how it affects you guys, but...
That is a big one for the court staff.
8 to 5. You don't have to get a hold of someone. You can't operate at night.
Yes, government is, but then look at this. I'm not picking on the city council, but look at the city council. They always have evening meetings all the time. Look at how many of them have evening meetings, you know. So
there is a difference with the city, I've noticed, though, where they have... Don's actually having staff look things up and go through things.
There are things that
there is some difference, but there's people that need to come here. I guess if we're going to have daytime meetings, if they do need evening meetings, I would say we make it easy for them. So
those attorneys don't charge us any more for an evening meeting than they do a daytime meeting. So we just have them 3 hours here today. By the time you take their travel time in and stuff, they don't charge us any more for any. There are some that will affect. It's a different nice effect.
I say sarcastically, how nice of them.
Yep. And I do see your point about we're treating these differently, but
we are.
I think our meetings are best left during the daytime. We are treating this group differently.
We are very much treating. Ellen, go ahead.
Well, I traveled up and visited with Cass County.
Ellen, up to the mic here. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're here, so we'll get you on there.
No problem. I'm just sharing something I saw one time, and I thought it was pretty effective. It kind of solves all those problems. I was up to Cass County. We're working on a landfill issue with them, and I had to go into their city council. Their city council meeting starts at 2 in the afternoon and then goes into the evening. They knock out that routine work that their hourly employees are affected on by doing that in the afternoon, but yet they accommodate people that, and if truth of the matter is, if you want to get here and testify, you can get here.
That's right.
If you want to do it bad enough.
That's right.
And furthermore, that's what you're responsible for. But I was amazed by that because I've never seen it. I thought, wow, that's pretty.
You don't see too many of them in the afternoon, but that's started at 3 in the afternoon or something.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get one other thing, too. And I'm not picking on Matt or Terry. And sometimes I work for Gary because he loads train. But Matt and Terry, how often don't they leave early from our meetings? Okay. And Matt has issues right now at work there that. Whatever. But there at the same time, they do have issues with that. Now, I would rather accommodate our board people than these other people at one meeting, okay?
I thought you were going to say you were going to try to find a time that I can't come. I'm going to come, Brian.
And I'm speaking for Terry, but I don't think Terry's going to want a night meeting.
Well, you might fall asleep early, but other than that.
You tell me first.
Okay. Stuff, but no, that's some, maybe not next meeting, but one of these meetings, we're going to have that discussion again. We're going to bring it up and have a discussion, switch in our meeting, stay evening meeting.
Whatever happens, did you all ever talk about
we're going to bring it up. Hey, if we have to have these meetings all the time, does 2 the evening at 6:30 work or not, or otherwise we'll go to the 14th?
That's my birthday, the 13th, so.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be a good one.
It's a good time.
Sure, my daughter has a softball game, but I'll just have to miss the softball game. That's part of being on here.
Yeah.
Well, no, Gary, I mean, if it doesn't work for enough people, we can have it the morning of the 14th. Hey, they showed up. They showed up when we didn't even have public hearings scheduled, and they showed up just so they could speak at the public opinion or whatever, public comment. How many times didn't they do that? You know, if they really, there's your option. Well, do you do it the 13th that night or the 14th during a regular meeting? What do you want to do?
Well, while you're thinking about that, are we livestock friendly here?
Yes, we are.
Okay, I didn't know for sure. I just wanted to make sure.
We approved that.
I thought
we already approved the 13th.
No, that's just conversation. That's what do you guys want? Morning of the 14th?
Either works for me.
Either works for you.
Either way, but we've had this discussion. There isn't going to be anything really terribly new.
There's some stuff that's presented that was asked to be presented last time that was not. And he did his due diligence here. And
Bonnie had some other comments, and I says, no, Bonnie, I says, this is a public hearing.
Well, what, you want to have it during our regular board meeting on the 14th?
That's when we'd have it otherwise, either the evening of the 13th or a regular board meeting on the 14th.
I can do either one.
I'm okay with either.
John is too. I'm okay with either. What works better for you? You're the last one here.
Whichever.
Yeah.
14th. Cost you to advertise every time you put in a new meeting.
We talked about...
How much does it cost?
I don't know what it is for each notice, but every time I advertise, it's just the cost for...
Yeah. We talked about new multimedia screens.
Wednesday the 14th.
Oh, he's supposed
We're going to do the 14th.
That's what my mind was before Bonnie talked to me, so let's do it Wednesday the 14th, and what else will we have on the agenda on the 14th? Let's put it at 9 o'clock. Let's put it at 9 o'clock.
Let me look here.
In public hearing. And we are voting at that meeting.
9 o'clock will be veteran.
And oh, 9 o'clock is veteran?
We'll have a closed session on the 14th.
With who?
With the attorneys.
Should we go 9?
And then we will have, we'll pass the budget, so we can have
We can do the budget later, though.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm just reading off things that we'll have that day. So we can do like 9:30 or
9:15.
9:15.
Well, veterans will be done by 9:15.
Okay. We can tell Pat not to be here until 10.
Yeah.
Well, no later than 10. They don't need to be here until 11.
Just don't rush the veterans.
They don't need to be here until 12.
I don't need to be here until 12.
Yeah, on that day.
Because we've got... Well, I guess maybe the budget won't take that terribly long now, but...
No, because we'll have our public hearing on the 31st, so it's just a matter of passing.
Right, our budget won't be... And we can put our budget after all...
Yeah, I will.
Is that a dig at me?
Pretty much.
With that multimedia stuff, did you guys ever talk about incorporating possibly televising our meetings where they could just throw it out to News Channel Nebraska, or does the college still do that? The college station.
We talked about getting like Lincoln has a overhead projector and different things, and putting it on a TV here. We talked about that. We haven't never looked into it. I guess Dave was going to.
They'll come to us when they're ready.
We've got Tom has he's given some information.
The TV station. You think they'll do something so that
TV
the only reason I was thinking was
the 14th.
Just people in town could do it, but they might be willing to pony up something to make it work. You mean?
And you might tell her.
Or is there a reason we don't televise them?
Oh, they'll all be here.
They'll all like being on TV like you.
Well, I mean, just
but you'll wear your bright orange, so they'll all.
We had that conversation several times. I don't know why we made that decision, but there was some reasonable. Reasons on why we can
some people do watch those council meetings and stuff and like to follow it. You know?
A lot more than you think.
Is there anything else for the good of the order?
I would like to comment on
otherwise, we will adjourn the meeting at 12:24.